5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.
Hello everybody, one and all, welcome to episode 87 of the TV Zone Plus podcast with me, Scott Holmes, and you.
I'd be Paul Mount.
The pirate, apparently.
Wow. Pirate of podcasting.
Welcome to episode 87, possibly a 7-up free episode.
The cool taste of summer? I don't think so.
Well, actually,
7-Up and go and stuff themselves. Because despite mentioning them once or twice in the last podcast, have I had any 7-Up in the post? Have I had any crates, whatever, a word of thanks off them?
No.
Disgusting, isn't it?
Sods. It's not like that last time when David Galdad sent us some Whisper Gold. Remember that?
I remember that.
That was lovely, that was.
But it wasn't Whisper Gold who sent us Whisper Gold, was it?
No, it wasn't Whisper Gold.
I just see the point in advertising things if we're not getting freebies. Ridiculous.
What are you advertising today, Paul?
Time out. Time out wafer bars. 111 calories in each bar. Cadbury's time out wafer.
And time out, if your prices and stock market goes up because of this podcast,
I'll be very surprised.
Send us some time out. Mm. But away from advertising, where we're not getting paid for advertising, we do have some fantabulistical shows for us to discuss.
We do, but it's a bit of a downbeat sort of show, really, when you look at the stuff we're covering, without spoiling it for anybody. It's not been the best of weeks, months,
no.
3 weeks since we did the last one?
3 weeks. Now, it has been 3 weeks because...
Explain why we've slipped from our schedule, Scott. It's your fault.
It is my fault. I've started my work now in my new job, which is fantastic. But it is dedicated weekends, so our usual Sunday recording times are no longer available. It wasn't that funny. And I've been taking overtime to try and catch up with a little bit of finances and things like that for the end of the month. So today was our first free day, really, to kind of get things done. I haven't been able to watch as much as I usually do, because before I would have a lot of time and I could watch all episodes of all the shows. This time, not so much.
But I think that's been a mercy, considering some of the stuff we've got to talk about this week, isn't it?
Well, we're going to start with, how we doing, that kind of thing. We always do. Then we're going to do a bit of news. Paul's got some news bits for us, because he likes his news bits. Then the TV reviews begin. And we're going to start with Intergalactic, the Sky One TV show about a bunch of women who have been locked up and they break out and they try and do stuff.
They're very angry women.
Very angry.
Very sweary women.
Yeah, very sweary women. Crazy women.
This is a British science fiction series and I really like to support British genre television because there isn't much of it around.
Maybe there's a reason.
It's probably just as well.
Then another TV review, that's number two of the day, Jupiter's Legacy, which is on our Netflix channel.
This is a superhero series, that's unusual.
We haven't heard much of them.
A superhero series, this is very odd.
Very, very odd.
I was watching, as a YouTuber called John Campier, I don't know if you know him.
No.
He's very good, he's based in California, he does a show every night, an hour and a half, and he gets split down into chunks, and he talks about the latest genre news and stuff. And he was talking about something, which I could have mentioned the news, but I'll do it now. That there's a Fantastic Four film coming, as we know, that the Marvel trailer recently sort of ended with this four suggested they come. And the Marvel have said they got the rights back to the Fantastic Four. And people have been saying,
which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Good old Christopher Eccleston.
Fantastic. There's a great trailer for his new audio series, by the way, which is based on. Remember that Trivial Lifetime thing that he did for TV? It's a new version of that. You'll listen to it later on.
Do you know what's great is how we always stick on topic?
Oh, good Lord, yes. Anyway, people have been saying since they heard that the Fantastic Four were coming back to Marvel, that the ideal people to play Reed Richards and Sue Storm would be John Krasinski and Emily Blunt from Quiet Place.
Because, I don't see that.
I sort of see it. I sort of think they might be a little bit too...
older?
It's hard for me to say old when everybody's younger than me. But I think by the time this film gets made and stuff. But I think I can see why people would say that. But Emily Blunt was recently interviewed. I don't know if it was about A Quiet Place 2, which is out soon. I can't wait. And she addressed this. And she said, well, no, nobody's talked to us about this. So not something I'm interested in. I think that we're saturated with superhero stuff. Now there's too much of it. And I don't like it personally. If something came along which is a really good character, a really interesting story, maybe. But it's not something I'm looking at.
Let's be fair as well. We haven't had the greatest of representations of Fantastic Four. No. Fantastic.
Thank you. I think she's right when she says that we're saturated by this stuff. And this chap, John Campia, that I watched.
We had the same situation with zombies.
Yeah. Well, he was saying the same thing. He got in his computer screen and he wrote the titles of all the superhero TV shows we've had in the last couple of years. He came up with 40. And he said, and it's the ones I can think of off the top of my head. This was everything from Gotham, Pennyworth,
the Umbrella Academy,
The Boys,
yeah.
Even up to Pennyworth, just everything, Jupiter's Legacy. And he thought, yeah, she's right, we are saturated. Mm. Whether we're suffering from fatigue or not is a different
thing. Is this the first thing that you're going to blame Marvel for, is bringing back these things?
No, I'm not going to blame Marvel for anything, because I am their bitch, as I said before. And they can do what they want with me. My concern is that people, being generally, rather dim, will lump all these superhero things together and not appreciate that some of them aren't Marvel and some of them are. The good ones are Marvel, and the Jupiter's Legacy, spoiled it there, are not Marvel, and you get the bad ones that aren't. And people will think, any superhero thing is all the same. Yeah. So I think, we are saturated by superhero stuff.
I mean, you do get the ones that we enjoy, like Umbrella Academy, and the Boys is kind of teetering on, getting old for what it's doing.
I haven't finished season two, and I quite like to go back to it because I understand that it is good.
Yeah, so there are the good ones out there, but then you get the oversaturated amounts where you just think, well, we've already seen this just with different characters and half the time done better.
Yeah, I think it's a question of,
we should come back to that when we discuss.
It's about the energy of the production as well, and I think that's an issue with Jupiter's Legacy. Anyway, what do you think?
What do you guys think?
If you watch John Campia, what do you guys think?
TV Zone Plus at
Stroke John Campia. Mail.com. Never mind. Ever contacts us. TV Zone Plus at mail.com.
I was right.
Yeah.
I was right. Ha, see, I know I could do it.
But no, do you think we're saturated? Well, we are saturated. Do you think it's too much? Do you think that...
Do you enjoy every single one of them? Yeah, do you hate them?
Do you watch them all? Do you try them all? Or do you just stick with the good ones, i.e. the Marvel ones?
if your nose was, your nose is so far at Marvel's backside that you've got a bit of Iron Man's thing on you.
Cadbury's Time Out Wafers. Just 111 calories in each bar.
Back to what we're talking about this episode.
Yeah, what else?
we see the triumphant return of Don't Shoot the Pilot, where we were tasked, Paul tasked myself and himself to go away and watch Earth 2.
I bet you're glad I did that.
Yeah. I was going to talk about that one.
1971 TV movie pilot for a series which, strangely enough, never materialised.
It's not Star Trek. No.
Doctor Who.
Then we have another triumphant return of Scott's Games Corner, where we'll be talking about two games, one, Secret Neighbor, and two, Hood, Outlaws and Legends. Outlaws and Legends, not Lords. And Hood. Outlaws and Legends. Now we...
Hood. That's an arrow, isn't it?
Yes.
Have we got an arrow sound effect?
Well, you look, and when I get to Games Corner, have my permission to use your box.
Ooh, your permission. I use my box whenever I like.
Instead
of a whole other issue.
Instead of Paul doing his usual sort of Star Wars run show that we're doing, we've had a new series from the Disney Star Wars team called The Bad Batch.
We're giving Star Wars for Dummies a break this episode because there will be too much Star Wars content otherwise.
There's never too much Star Wars content.
There is this week. There is The Bad Batch.
The Bad Batch.
Which is on Disney Plus, you've watched the first two Disney episodes, Plus, two or three.
It's coming out on a weekly process and two are out at
the moment. The first week.
Yes, and I've watched them both now. They came out at separate times, but they're both available now. Then we're going to the hypothetical cinema because they're not open yet, but they may be soon.
Hopefully on Monday.
Yay! Paul will be talking about The Stowaway.
Oh, sorry.
And Oxygen,
which is a new film, brand new film, hot off the presses. Only arrived on the Netflix channel yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday the
13th of the 5th.
And Oxygen appeared on the Netflix channel yesterday.
My birthday in 5 days.
What do you mean?
I don't want to kiss on my birthday. No.
So if you want to send Scott any timeout wafers and Cadbury's, 111 calories.
How funny would it be if I just had like a massive post of timeout wafers?
It wouldn't be fair.
It'd be funny and I'd eat them all.
But you prefer Whisper Gulls, isn't that true? Washed down by the cool taste of summer. 7-Up.
My God.
Anyway, that's what we're doing.
Stowaway as well, you'll be talking
Stowaway,
about.
Stowaway, yes, which I can vaguely remember. That was on Netflix a couple of weeks ago.
And then we'll see how any other business comes up at the end.
It could be anything.
It could be anything.
Anything at all could happen in the next half hour.
Anything at all can happen within the time of this podcast, because we don't even know. All we know is what we're talking about, but we tend to trail away from
that.
But
actually, we don't actually know what we're talking about either, really. Good story.
So, let's kick off with some news items.
Okay, several news items to talk about. Some of them are usual trivial stuff. One is a slightly heavier topic, which I think we need to address.
Heavy man.
Because it's sort of an elephant in the genre room at the moment. First of all, we've just had the trailer for the new Venom film, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which was due out last year and is coming out July-ish, I think. Starring Tom Hardy with a squeaky voice. Sequel to Venom, which we didn't like, did we?
No.
We did not like that.
No.
What do you think of the trailer for the new one?
I did not like it. It starts off with some really bad attempt at comedy. Oh. Of them making food and stuff. And, you know, Venom and Eddie Brock obviously decided to live, you know, coexist together comfortably.
I've forgotten the Venom voice. How annoying that
was. But then you've got Woody Harrelson, who is playing Carnage. Now, Carnage is a very exciting character because he's very sort of twisted and sadistic, whereas Venom is just kind of aggressive, ruthless, and, you know, he's a bit calculated. Carnage is a little bit more over the top because he's a serial killer. He's a symbiote.
Has he got any powers?
Same as Venom, but he uses it more twisted rather than as aggression. He uses it. I think in the comic books he's very into torture and stuff like that because he's that twisted. Because he's a serial killer with a symbiote on him, which amplifies your need for craziness and killingness. I do like Woody Harrelson as an actor, but I will watch it, but I can't promise you I'll like it.
Well, I watched this trailer and I just rolled my eyes. It's directed by Andy Serkis, did you know?
No, I didn't
know
that.
Yes, it is apparently. So I would expect something halfway decent. I just had no interest in it. I didn't like the first one. I didn't hate it as much as you did, but it just annoyed me. Tom Hardy's silly Mickey Mouse voice as Brock. Is it Brock? Eddie Brock. Annoyed me. The whole tone of it. And from this trailer, I couldn't really get much of an idea of what the story was.
It just looks like they're pitting two symbiotes together to fight. Yeah. It doesn't seem to be an amplified story to it.
It's of no interest to me. I went into a supermarket a couple of weeks ago. Did I tell you about this?
Wow.
And when I went in there, some bloke came in with a machine gun and he shot up all the stuff in the Kellogg's aisle, all the Weetabix, the cornflakes, everything.
Yeah.
He was a serial killer!
I need a new co-host.
That's more interesting than the bloody Venom trailer.
That's true. See, even they agree.
That's right. So that's the Venom trailer. It looks like a pile of pants to me.
Yeah, it doesn't look like my cup of tea.
But I dare say I'll trundle along to see it.
You're going to have a look, haven't we?
It's the cinema, and I haven't been there.
It is nice that at the end of the cinema, though, it is nice it said, only in theatres.
Yeah, so it's almost like saying, up yours.
Yeah, up yours streaming.
Did you see, talking to trailers, the new Quiet Place trailer? The final Quiet Place trailer?
No,
it looks so good. It's clear what it is now. I thought it probably was. It's part prequel and part sequel. So you've got flashbacks to the invasion actually happening. So
right.
You've got John Krasinski's character. There was a nice shot of a nice throwback to the first film where he's in a shop and everything's starting to happen and he walks past this aisle and he's got toys on it and he's got a toy model spaceship on
the spaceship
it, which is like, which is references the first film in the set.
Yeah.
And then they have flash forwards to his wife and the kids after he's died.
Hearing that though has put me on a little bit less of an excitable thing for it, because you know me in flashbacks and stuff when they oversaturate.
Well, I think it's interesting because we don't know what happened and it will be quite nice to
I
see the actual
like
invasion.
That, though, not yeah, knowing. I like that whole thing of this has just happened.
Yeah, but you're wrong. This is going to be good. It's going to be good. Apparently, John Krasinski, I think it's his name, yeah. He's got plans for how they could carry the series on. I don't know. Because I was a bit concerned about the sequel. I thought, yeah, it's such a perfect film in itself. But it looks as if... This looks great, anyway. It looks fantastic. So
we will have a gander. And that's out
next month. So next I'm very month. Much looking forward to seeing that. Let's talk trailer-wise, just briefly, because it's slightly stale news now, is the Marvel trailer that came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Which was... it was terrific. It was like a sort of a shout out to the cinema, to the audience to say, look, cinemas are back. This is where you see films like this.
The thing is, we're supposed to be well into the Marvel Cinematic Universe now for what we had. And I think this is their way of saying, we're back.
Yeah.
We're going to be as bombastic as we ever have been. Yeah. And it's a nice push considering, you've got all these new unknown sort of characters. When you look at things like Iron Man, Captain America and Thor, these highly known characters, even outside of the comic book circle, you got these characters that aren't much known outside of the comic book circle. So they're going to push this hard.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice now to get a nice steady stream of Marvel content.
Well, of course, we've got TV series. Black Widow coming out in July.
Yeah.
Then, as the trailer confirmed, we've got Shang-Chi. No,
Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi is July.
Seven Rings or something like that.
No, Shang-Chi September, I think. Eternals November and Spider-Man in December.
Now, the hope is obviously because I know in India there's been a massive, horrendous spike with COVID.
Yeah.
So we are prepared. We're much more landlocked now. Mm-hmm. Well, people are still going on holiday. But they aren't going on holiday as much, so hopefully it can be contained in India because it's a horrible situation for them to be in.
Yeah.
But fingers crossed it doesn't spread across the world.
But beyond that, again, I was listening to, John Campia. I don't want the show to become like John Campia. he does make some interesting points that are worth repeating to avoid us coming up with anything original. But he was saying apparently Shang-Chi and the Eternals have been specifically tailored for the Chinese audience, because that's where the Marvel and all films make big money.
Yeah.
But apparently the Chinese authorities, and China's like, it's a very strictly regulated country, and they have their own internet. They can't Google, because there's certain things they're not allowed to look at. So they can only look at a specific information that the government will allow them to look at. And apparently they haven't yet passed Shang-Chi or the Eternals as suitable for being screened in China.
Oh, God.
Because apparently there's some controversy about, it's just the stereotype version of Chinese people, red hats and kung fu and lanterns.
And that was all the rage in the 70s,
but
though.
This is what the character is. And apparently because there's that sort of element to the Eternals as well, there's some fear that they might not get released in China, which would be a big kick in the wallet for Marvel.
Massive kick,
But I don't know, because I would have thought if Shang-Chi would appeal to a Chinese audience, but if they're not going to watch it because they think it stereotypes them, that's going to be
A problem.
And I'm interested. I mean, Shang-Chi and the Eternals aren't characters that I'm massively excited about, because I'd rather go straight to Spider-Man, to be honest, because that's the one I want to see. But Marvel has surprised us in the past, as we've said before, with these minor characters.
Things like Guardians of the Galaxy was the biggest one.
But I think the big thing for the trailer was the reveal of titles of other films coming up, like Wakanda, Black Panther, Wakanda
Forever.
Well,
it was quite an exciting list as it was going through, the inspirational music and stuff, the sort of untitled Circle with the Four, because I messaged you after watching it.
I haven't spotted that. Of course, it's fairly obvious.
Was that a Fantastic Four thing? And you were like, where? So I sent you a picture of it. Yeah. And you're like, that's definitely a four.
Well, as I said to you, when that trailer came on, I thought, it's just a fan thing, it's not a proper trailer.
Yeah.
Because they just showed the clips of previous films. But it was so nicely done, because the way it launches then into, this is what's coming.
Yeah.
And then that fantastic Marvel music kicks in, and it does literally, your hairs on the back of your neck stand on end. Especially when you see new footage from Black Widow and Shang-Chi. We're starting to get footage and little clips of Eternals. And then we've got Doctor Strange next year. We've got Wakanda Forever. And the interesting one, of course, is Miss Marvel 2 is now... Captain Marvel 2 is the Marvels. Which is odd. And of course, people are now saying, Brie Larson, they've lost faith in Brie Larson. Because we've got a series of Miss Marvel, which has just finished filming, which is coming on Disney Plus at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So presumably that links in with Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Monica Rambeau from...
The thing is, I know Brie Larson, she shoots herself in the foot a lot.
She has wound people up.
Unfortunately, hasn't she? Yeah. She's very sort of strong... you know, she's got strong opinions.
Well, she's very feminist. She's got very strong feminist principles and values, which are fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think she brings them across in a very sympathetic way.
No. No. A lot of people get frustrated with the way she discusses things.
Yeah.
Like, she acts like she cannot be wrong.
Yeah.
And things like that. And everybody can be wrong, but she acts like she's infallible.
But you've seen that clip. We've watched it at the press launch thing, haven't we, with Chris Hemsworth, where she wound him up and said how she feeling. She's more powerful than thought, is she? She's more powerful than all of them, and you can see there's a bit of friction there.
Well, they had that discussion about she's like, I like to try and do my own stunts like nobody else does, and then Chris Hemsworth goes, Tom Cruise does his own stunts, and she just looks really, really annoyed, But you can see Chris Hemsworth is just grabbing that spoon. Yeah. And he's Australian. What can you expect from him?
Yeah.
You know?
Tact,
he just can't say, yeah,
tact doesn't come naturally to our Australian friends. Yeah, apologies to any Australian listeners.
Yeah. it's very exciting to see what's coming up on the Marvel. So,
but I say, as I mentioned before, my slight concern is that people are going to lump in all the superhero stuff and they go, oh, I've had enough now, without realising that there are different levels of quality.
Plus, though, we've got Loki coming soon as well.
Well, that's another thing I was going to mention in the news. Loki's coming up in a couple of weeks' time. It's been moved to Wednesdays now, the debut dates, instead of Fridays, which is interesting. I wonder why they've done that.
Because
everything else Disney Plus has released, including Star Wars stuff, has come out on a Friday. Although Bad Batch is Wednesdays, isn't it?
Bad Batch is Wednesdays. It might just be a new
tactic.
They're
probably just trying to
see if they make more money on different days and stuff.
But of course, internet fools will go, no, it's because Falcon and Winter Soldier was a flop, so they moved it to a different day.
Nah.
Don't think so. In other news, you'll be very disappointed, of course. I'm hoping this is going to set you off. The Irregulars has been cancelled after just one series.
Oh, no!
I'm afraid so.
Oh, no!
I'm sorry to have to break it to you. the wrong sodding button again.
It's okay, that works fine for everybody. I have no love lost with that show.
No, I mean, I watched four and I just thought, I think by the time I watched the fourth one, it was just about cancelled. I thought, what's the point now? And I didn't think it was a bad show, but I think it was just misconceived.
It was terribly acted.
The acting wasn't great. I think, as I've said before, I think the Sherlock Holmes myth and those stories, they're ripe for reinvention, but I just don't think this was...
Well, when you think, say, you know, go back to Star Wars for Dummies and you think, you know, Christian Hayneson was meant to be this lead sort of, a co-lead character, but because he was so badly acting, you didn't feel it. And I had that same thing with the lead female character in this show, because she was so wooden and uninspiring, and nothing seemed to impact her in the world. She was just reading from a script.
I didn't find it too bad, but I think by episode four, I thought, I don't think this whole idea, this whole world they've created is working particularly
I'm not surprised that
I'm sort of surprised it's gone this quickly, because I thought, you know, it's only just come out.
They probably listened to the podcast, heard my opinions, and thought, you know what, that guy's right.
That seems unlikely. But you never know.
I'll just be quiet then. That's my thing.
I tell you what you need, and I know you need it. You need, my boy, to perk you up a little bit. What you need is a timeout wafer.
Oh, look at that, a timeout wafer.
It's a timeout wafer from Cadbury's. It's only 111 calories, so it's good on the waistline and on the wallet.
Not if I eat the whole bloody six pack.
It's only still 600 odd calories, which is less than 2 Mars bars. I don't know, I just made that up. Anyway, that's timeout wafers. I mean, that's Irregulars, which has been cancelled. Now, time to put on serious faces to talk about the latest business to do with. Well, it's Doctor Who related, of course. It's Noel Clarke and John Barrowman.
So celebrity accusations.
This all broke a couple of weeks ago. Let's start with John Barrowman because he's the one I feel most sympathy for.
And it's a bit less intense than...
And these allegations, even though they're not allegations because it was like fairly well known anyway.
John Barrowman,
during the filming of Doctor Who and Torchwood, would get his tackle out and wave it about and put it on people's arms and make them laugh. There was nothing sexual about it, nothing predatory about it. It was just him being gay and flamboyant and stupid. Just being over the... You know what he's like. He's Mr. Jazz Hands. Yeah. He's Mr. Everything
Fabulous. All that stuff.
Yeah, it's all that sort of... Yeah, everything's fabulous and...
It's not something you over should the top do. Don't get me wrong.
It's a stupid... You know, imagine if we did it in our workplaces.
Yeah. It was a comedy thing he thought was funny. He got asked to stop. Yeah. He stopped.
Well, that's the thing. At the time, and this was well known because it's been on various behind-the-scenes documentaries, the cast, Eve Miles and Gareth David Lloyd, and they all of them said, oh, he's always getting it out and always waving it around. And they just laughed it off. Mm. And he said he just did it because it's the tension of being on a television thing, a hype process. And they all said, we had a good laugh about it. It was something that John did. And it just sort of went away. But it wasn't a secret. If you've seen that video that's on YouTube and you've gone, well, if you haven't seen it, it's really good. The Ballad of Russell and Julie, that was done when Russell T. Davis and Julie Gardner were leaving Doctor Who at the same time.
Is that them singing?
That's them singing the Victoria Wood song.
I can't do it.
Yeah, the old Victoria Wood song. And there's even a line with David Tennant saying, images of Barrowman getting his cock out. And this is a video that's freely available on YouTube that millions of people have seen.
Yeah.
Suddenly this has become allegations against John Barrowman. But he's even issued a statement to say, yeah, I used to do this. And I did it out of a sense of fun. I thought it was amusing. People seemed to think it was amusing. But Julie Gardner, the producer, has since said, yeah, I became aware of this. Somebody made a complaint about it. I called him and his agent and said it had to stop. It wasn't acceptable. And he stopped.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I stopped it in 2008. I haven't done it since then. So to suddenly use that as a weapon against him and to cancel him.
The thing is, it's like when you do anything, you know, you do something at work and someone says, oh, you've done that wrong. So you just stop it and you fix it. And that's what he had done. He thought it was funny. As long as he wasn't there saying, you know, open wide.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that.
But he wasn't creeping into people's trailers and going, look at this. Exactly. Or making advice.
Don't get me wrong. If he had done it to me, I would have been like, oh, didn't like that. Well, and I get the feeling if he said that, I get the feeling he'd be like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it would be a case of, well, I'm going to do it to you. Tough.
But I think he was doing it to the cast, and I think that there may have been crew members who around and saw it and didn't like it. And that's where they complained from. I don't think any of the cast complained about it. But what annoys me is that now the BBC have got this new interactive, immersive Doctor Who thing, Time Fracture, coming out. And last week, John Barrowman filmed a bit for it. And now they've decided they're taking that bit out. And you think, well, where does this leave him now? Where does this leave this character? And they're now saying that...
Well, he's meant to be back in the next season.
Well, there are rumours he's back in the next series. There's rumblings about some sort of tortured revival.
Yeah.
Has that gone now? That's... because of something that was public knowledge that happened 13 years ago? And that and annoys me because, for all his outrageousness, I like John Barrowman. I think he's very charismatic. As I said, I've met him and spoken to him a couple of times. He is what he
did
is.
Did he get his tackle out?
I did get his tackle out, no. Because he was carrying shopping at the time. But that's what I said. Have I told you that story? I won't go through it because it's boring. It's me name dropping. But I like name dropping. I'll name drop Noah Clarke in a minute.
Okay, Jimmy, countdown.
Steady on.
That's a good place reference.
It is a very good place reference. Anyway, so I feel sorry for John Barrowman because he's been dragged into this almost as sort of, not as to cover up Noah Clarke. I don't think Noah Clarke has brought this up. I think people found a video at a convention where Noah Clarke's having a laugh and he's saying to the woman who played Jackie Tyler, oh, do you remember when John did this? And she said, oh, he put it on my shoulder. And they were laughing about it. But, of course, the press have now seen this. And it's like, oh, John Barrowman, pervert.
Yeah.
And I just feel sorry for John Barrowman because it's a stupid thing he did, which he now doesn't do. And I also feel because he's always felt proud of his association with Doctor Who. And if this now sours it, because his whole career now was relaunched because of Doctor Who. And all the stuff he's done, the game shows, the chat shows, the musicals.
And he does Dancing on Ice as well. Dancing on,
and even they're talking about, some MP is saying he should be sacked. Fuck off, it's nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It's up to Dancing on Ice whether they sack him or not. But this is the court of social media.
And the question is, did he do it on Dancing on Ice?
Well, no, I'm sure
he did. Because if he didn't, and nobody's come forward about it, then why should he get fired from that?
Well, he hasn't done it since 2008. That's fucking 13 years ago.
Yeah.
I think there's got to be you've got to draw a line. And say,
again, just to emphasize, it's not a case that he was doing it to be grotesque or anything.
He wasn't trying to get off with anybody. He thought it was funny.
Got told no, don't do it.
Yeah.
So he didn't do it again.
Yeah.
You know?
But the adults that he did it to on set were adult enough to laugh it off.
And that's adult.
Yeah.
Adults.
Yeah.
You know, emphasize adults. Yeah. He didn't do it to like the kids.
No.
You know, so.
So, I mean, I hope that for his sake it will. I'd like him to appear on some show and say, look, yeah, I accept I did this. It's a stupid thing to do. I've done it for 13 years, but for God's sake. You know, I apologise if anybody was offended at the time. I didn't know they were offended because nobody said so.
Yeah.
Because people don't mention it at the time. And there's so much stuff coming out. Gal Gadot, you know, she's made there was all the Joss Whedon stuff.
Yeah.
She has now explained what her issue with it was and how she dealt with it.
Mm.
You know the scene in the Joss Whedon Justice League where the Flash falls on top of her and he's sort of looking at her boobs?
Yeah.
She refused to do that scene. And that was the issue she had. And he apparently said, well, if you don't do this scene, I will ruin your career. But she dealt with it there and then. She said, I'm not doing the scene. She went to the bosses, so they had to get a stand-in to do it, so it's not actually her.
Yeah.
But as she said, I had an issue and I dealt with it then. And I do wish that people would have...
Well done to her for doing it. She's an actress.
She's in a position of power. So, I understand that perhaps junior members of staff on productions don't have that power.
But I think at the same time, she's an actress. If she's taking the script, if it's in there, it wasn't in the original script.
No.
You know, so I understand that. But... As an actor or an actress, you tend to do the jobs that you're given, don't you? You know?
Yeah.
I guess she felt uncomfortable and they used a stand-in. That's no problem.
Yeah.
She dealt with it. Well done to her for dealing with it there and then. She didn't kind of wait for everything to be over, wait for the paychecks to stop and then start going, right, let's complain now.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult subject to talk about because there are so many different opinions flying about here, there, everywhere.
Right.
We're not saying that our opinions on this matter are infallible, you know, because you have your own.
But I just particularly wanted to mention the John Brown, I think, because I think that he's been hung out to dry on the basis of a desperation to to follow up on the Noel Clarke thing. And it's a dig, you know, trying to say that other actresses and doctors were complaining. Talking about Noel Clarke, I think that is a different kettle of fish, because all these allegations came up the week after he was given a BAFTA nomination for contribution to cinema or something.
Yeah.
And
because he's done a few films, isn't
he? He's done a lot of stuff. I mean, he's become quietly a major figure in British film and television. He creates his own projects. He's got his own production company. And this has all come down around him. And apparently all this stuff has been investigated. The BAFTA didn't know about it at the time. And they said if we knew this, he was under investigation by The Guardian, then we wouldn't have given the award or we'd have paused it. But The Guardian were doing this. The week afterwards they had. And I read the thing that was online and it is pretty horrendous what he said that he did.
Yeah.
But it is, at this point, it is still what people say he said he did. And I accept that there are a lot of people, and I don't, you know, there's no smoke without fire in certain cases, and I think that there's clearly something here, because I think what's happened with Noel Clarke, he became very powerful in the industry quite quickly, and I think he possibly abused that power. Apparently he bullied a lot of people, he was rude to a lot of people, he would demand things.
Well, quick power tends to make you quite pig-headed.
Yeah. If you're not used to it, you suddenly get power.
You get that attitude of, do you know who I am, sort of thing, you know?
And I think there was a lot of that with him, apparently.
Yeah.
But there were slightly more sinister things where, you know, I won't go into all the allegations, but there were slightly more sexual things where he made actresses strip off at auditions, which...
Harvey Weinstein kind of stuff.
That's not quite as bad as... I don't think it's any sort of rape-type things.
Yeah.
But it's more sort of, you know, inappropriate comments and inappropriate behaviour. Which is disappointing, and it's disappointing because Noel Clarke is a great role model for the black community.
Mm.
You know, he's a black kid who's come from nowhere and really worked hard to make a name for himself. And I think that in itself is a shame because it's sort of a kick in the teeth to that sort of movement. And I think it's a shame because he genuinely seems like a nice bloke. I mean, I did interview him a few years ago when he had that film Stories 24, science fiction film, which is quite a decent little film. And I just... talking to him, I just admired his work ethic. As he said to me, I've got 11 scripts on my laptop I'm working on, I've got these projects, I've got that. And I thought, yeah, good for you. But even at that time, these things might have been going on.
If I ever become a celebrity for whatever reason,
you will.
I am going to make sure to pay a cameraman to constantly film me wherever I go.
Not in the toilet.
Yeah. Mm. God, yeah. Oh, maybe just film me going to the toilet on my own.
Yeah.
You know, just so if somebody does come out to say, you've done this, I could say, I've got footage of that day.
I was there on my own.
There I am. Because you have to do that these days because social media has given everyone a voice to say whatever the hell they want. And
I think it's a shame that we've got to this, though. I know. Mm. And I'm, you know, again, I'm not, you know, decrying any of these people who've made these complaints. I always, in the back of my mind, is always, well...
The thing is, if you get the ones, and you will get the ones that are lying, they then besmirch the people who are telling the truth.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the truth and the lies get mixed in with each other. And it's unfair on those who have actually had these terrible experiences with, you know, these, like, celebrities or powerful people. And then, you know, so this person, like, damn near that person, like, but that person could be telling the complete and absolute truth.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want to victim blame because I'm sure it's a terrible, traumatic thing when something like this happens. And I understand that if you're low down the food chain on a TV thing, you perhaps don't know who to talk to or don't know who to say something to. But I just think that if the people at the beginning had said something, it might have stopped it happening to lots of other people.
Mm.
But then I can't put myself in the mind of a terrified young girl who's 17 or 18 who's approached by a big star who says something inappropriate.
Yeah.
Do you want to risk your job by saying something? I can understand that.
It's a difficult thing.
And having been in that position, I can't really put myself in that place.
Exactly.
But it's just a shame.
We can't sit here and say, I will have done this. If you haven't experienced it, you can't say much on it.
But if... extreme and stupid example, but you know the filming stuff we do, if somebody on it suddenly said, look at this, and got their tackle out, I'd say, oh, put it away, you fucking idiot. He would say something, but I understand that I have the ability to say that.
And it probably is easier for a bloke.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got one. And yeah. I'd probably go look at it and go, that's small.
Yeah.
You know, take the mick.
Where's the rest of it then?
That sort of thing. And bounce back. And yeah, it probably is much easier for a bloke in these situations.
It's a difficult issue to talk about and get your point across. I'm not saying, oh, poor Noah Clarke, because clearly he's got issues. And he's admitted that, yeah, I did some things. He denies a lot of what's been said, but he accepts that his behaviour was inappropriate.
Yeah.
And he wants to learn. And I accept that he's accepted there's an issue. So, yeah, clearly these allegations appear to be right.
Some of them.
Some of them. Certainly yeah. Some of them are. Some of them, we just don't know.
We don't know.
But I'm not saying
here. It's the same thing with the Michael Jackson case.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing. Yeah, he was, you know, found innocent of it all and stuff, but, you know, money talks a lot as well.
Well,
so we don't know, you know, as far as we can say now, he is innocent because he was deemed innocent.
Well, you know that documentary was on a couple of years ago, which I refused to watch, Finding Neverland, which was this wannabe director who wanted to make a name for himself, found these two boys, I can't remember their names now, who claimed they'd been abused. One of them went to court the week before last to try and make another claim against the Jackson estate, his fourth, and the judge threw it out and said it was unbelievable. But that didn't get any publicity.
Yeah.
When they had these documentaries, oh, Michael Jackson, the pervert. But now a judge has said, no, I don't believe this. There isn't enough to go before the court.
Yeah,
that's sort of being missed.
Yeah.
This effectively vindicated Michael Jackson from anything that's been said about him.
Yeah. And the thing is, as soon as somebody says something negative, it's all over the place. As soon as somebody says something positive, nobody talks about it.
Well, it's the thing in the newspapers. If a newspaper prints a story about somebody that's slanderous or libelous or whatever, 3 months later, on page 2, we apologise. There's a little tiny
small
little box.
Thing.
It's
we
never a big article. We made a mistake.
Is
that, yeah, we now understand that we were misled. But that's, unfortunately, salacious news and
the way of the
sleazy
world.
Stuff sells.
Same with online, you know, social media and stuff. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
People will say whatever they can, but there's no comeuppance for them, for these.
But I think that, whatever, I mean, clearly there are issues with Noah Clarke, and I suspect that a lot of this stuff is true. It may be all of it is true. And I think he's probably the end of his career. It's hard to come back from. If you think of look at the likes of Kevin Spacey
and stuff like that,
you know, won't work again. Noel Clarke, it's a shame because he's clearly a talent and had a lot more to give.
The thing is, it's something I'm quite proud of us with. When we do this podcast, we never point fingers. We never say, we only give our opinions, and if you appreciate our opinions, great. Yeah. If you disagree, if you have the right to disagree, and let us know.
Well, this is the thing.
We
are two straight white blokes, one much older than the other one.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, you look very old. We're not people who are probably qualified to talk about this stuff.
Mm.
But I think I want to talk about it and make it, and, you know.
Yeah, well, you're allowed your opinion.
Yeah,
provided you're not pointing fingers to say this person's this.
I'm not sitting here saying these women are all bloody liars, money grabbers. I'm saying, they have obviously been terrible. And it's a shame that these things have happened. It's a shame that this career has been ruined. It's a shame these people are traumatised. I wish there was a better way of this all being dealt with at the time. I wish that people could have the ability to sort it out at the time. And I understand that they, for various reasons, they probably don't. And it festers away and it builds, and there are more and more allegations. Then it becomes something which is going to come out because there's so much of it. And I think that's what's happened with Noel Clarke. I just think it's a shame because he seems like a nice bloke. He seems like a very positive, upbeat, creative, talented bloke.
You don't know what's going on in the closet.
But you don't know what's going on. And he's a family man. He's got a wife, he's got kids. And so I think, well, why... We don't know. People's heads are strange places and people
very
do odd things. So just want to, and it's all very, so I hope anybody listening to this doesn't think that we're siding with anybody, but I'm just pointing out, you know, that this has all happened and what a shame it is that these people have, you know, and if Noel Clarke has done these things, then he deserves to have his career suffer. I think it's different with John Barham, and I think that the same things are being applied to him as being applied to people who've done much worse things. He admits he did a stupid thing, but for stupid reasons. And I think it's... And I just got annoyed when I heard the BBC had pulled this time fracture thing that he's done. Because that's them saying, no, we cancelling him. And it seems to suggest that we won't see that character back. Whether he's filmed the next series or whether they're going to dump that episode, I just don't know. It's this knee-jerk reaction all the time that annoys me.
Mm.
I just people
well, look at Gina Carano. She's been called back in for Disney now,
apparently,
isn't she?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. These things do blow over.
Yeah.
Certain things do. Big things obviously don't. But these slightly less...
Kickoff's about a comment that you've made on Twitter.
If it's a comment, it's slightly different to sort of putting your hand down somebody's nicks or doing something pervy. That's obviously not going to go away. But if you make a stupid comment, like James Gunn, for example, remember he was sacked?
Yeah.
Now he's like flavour of the month again.
Yeah,
because
he's back again.
Those things pass. But I accept that inappropriate behaviour is a different thing altogether. So anyway, it's all very...
It's that knee-jerk reaction that we need to step away from and look at it at the distance and say, right, let's see.
It's the hysteria of it. You know, as I said to you before we started filming, I think that within an hour of these allegations coming up, people on Twitter were calling Noel Clarke a paedophile and a rapist. Mm. And that's never been on the table. It's never been suggested. But people on social media take this leap. And that's what I know.
Because they've got no consequence of it.
Yeah. They can say these things. There's no comeback.
I could go on there and say such and such as this. Yeah. No consequences on it. Nothing true about it. Mm. And there's no consequences for me. Yeah. I can just say it. And that's the problem with social media. That you can say these things without any conviction.
Yeah.
And
I think it's a nightmare. I suppose it makes it hard now to look back at those first two season Doctor Who episodes with Noel Clarke in, because you're always going to think of what's happened to him since.
Exactly. And they're great seasons. Yeah. So.
And I hope the BBC don't pull those episodes now off iPlayer and, you know...
Because it's likely.
Yeah, you can't wipe people from history because they've done some terrible things. You have to sort of say...
Well, I always say, if you forget all the bad things that have been done in the past, people will repeat those bad things.
Yeah.
You know, if you forgot about Hitler and his, you know, Third Reich regime and stuff, somebody will be like, nobody's tried this before, this could work.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did. Nobody had tried what he had done before, and he took it to a monstrous level.
Yeah.
And if that's forgotten about, somebody else will do it. But hopefully the world is starting to go, remember when Hitler did that thing? That was pretty bad. I'm not going to do that. Yeah.
Well, it's the whole issue with the statues of slavers and stuff like that, with Colston, Edward Colston, pulling down his statue and throwing it in the river. Yeah, okay, you've made your point, but it's better off now in a museum with a plaque explaining who he was and why we shouldn't idolise him. Yeah. That's much more better than chucking his statue in the river. But that's just an impulse reaction in response to the whole Black Lives Matter. The whole world is such, it's so loud, and everybody's shouting at everybody else. And
well, everybody's got a voice.
Yeah.
And not everybody's voice should be here. I mean, we've got a voice, but we're not using it for an aggressive political term.
We're just two straight white blokes, just exasperated by things and...
scared of the world that's around us, pretty much.
Disappointed by the behaviour of people that we like, and... trying to point out unfairness for other people who seem to be dragged in. I mean, I'm talking about Barrowman Clarke. I just think it's a shame for John Barrowman, who I like, if his career is now tainted by something which wasn't hidden from public knowledge. Yeah. Suddenly people are being outraged by it. And I think that's wrong. Noel Clarke, if this is right, deserves anything that's coming to him. Even if some of it's right, he still did things he shouldn't have done. But I think John Barrowman was just a bit of a twat and has learned from it. And I think it's a shame if his career, and particularly his association with Doctor Who, which is important to him, is now ruined by this. And if he walks away now thinking, well, Doctor Who's ruined my life, that would be a terrible, terrible thing.
Well, that was 40 minutes of pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah. Just to round off on that, I know there are different opinions, different views. You might be out there going, you stupid bastards, what are you talking about? You know, it's difficult to get across what you think about these things, but it's just sort of spitballing on it, really. I'm not condoning anything anybody's done for whatever reason, but I think we need to look at the different layers. Certainly what Noel Clarke seems to have done is far worse than what John Barrowman has done and what has been alleged other people have done. And bearing in mind, a lot of these things are allegations. I just wish that we would not have this instant response of cancelling people and wiping them out, because there's two sides to stories. And
let's hear the case first. TV review?
After a timeout wafer. Timeout from Cadbury's. 111 calories in each bar. TV review, you say?
A TV review of Intergalactic.
Yeah, it's the lesser of two evils, really, I suppose, isn't it? Now, interesting thing about this is a new British science fiction series that's currently airing on Sky One. It's available as a box set on Now TV. Years ago, Sky One were in discussions, apparently, to get the rights to Blake 7, Terry Nation's 1970s BBC space opera, which ran from 77 to about 81, four seasons. And it's one of those shows that obviously is of its time. It's rickety, it's rackety, the special effects are, you know...
I think we might have the name of the episode, Rickety Rackety.
Oh, yeah. Rickety Rackety Timeouts. So anyway, they had, you know, trying to get the rights to do this series, and the Terry Nation estate is notoriously difficult to negotiate with, because they wouldn't let the Doctor Who have the rights to the Daleks at first, which makes you think, well, why not let Doctor Who have the rights to the Daleks, because nobody else is going to be able to use them. But anyway, apparently they're quite hard to negotiate with. Now, I don't know what happened. I don't know if they got the rights and they didn't do anything with them, or they never got the rights. But what they seem to have done instead is just remake it, because Intergalactic is basically Blake 7, but with lots of very angry, very shouty, very unpleasant women and characters generally in it. it's basically it's about this cop, and she's in a cop patrolling this futuristic new London, which is, I quite like the idea of London, which is part.
It's very derelict. Sort of Jetson sort of world. Yeah. Down below, it's all derelict and stuff. So they've built these cities above, and it's like the Jetsons living on tall towers and things like that. It looks quite nice. The atmosphere is very good.
The visuals are great. The visuals are fantastic. It really looks big.
But yeah, she's this sort of police officer. She's hunting down this woman who has stolen some energy source. She captures her, but then a video gets released of this police officer stealing that energy source again. So she gets put into prison, which is like this ship on top, and they're going to take her to a planet where it's not many people survive, less as much if you're a police officer. Turns out that she's been kind of, I can't think of the word now.
Framed,
thank you. She's been framed for it.
In case anybody's wondering, I'm eating a timeout bar.
Which means that, she then, they get asked, the mother, I think it's her mother, isn't it? Her mother said, I want her back, because we know she's been framed, but it's a bit too late because there's been a prison escape. And that, it's a bit ridiculous how they escape from prison, because one of them says, I need to go to the toilet. And they're like, oh, okay. And apparently they don't have toilets in their prison cells. What kind of prison has a place where if you need to go to the toilet, you need to take you out of your prison cell? You've got these hardened criminals and they won't have toilets in there. Come on now. Let's really think about how easy it is to plan an escape. Because there's only three other people on that ship that seem to have any sort of weaponry. The rest of them were just flying a bloody ship. So it was a ridiculous way for them to escape. But then it's about the police officer sort of surviving the situation because they know that she's a police officer. There's this mysterious character with a face mask thing on and stuff like that. So there's a lot going on. And I know I thought it was a bit better than what you did. excuse me. You know, I watched three episodes and the story plodded along quite well. The worlds that they landed on were quite nice looking. It all looked very kind of authentic. The ships looked quite cool, but they didn't look like stereotypical ships that you'd expect to see. You know, the prison ship they're on was like kind of like a circle with a front sort of thing on it. But I think both me and you agree that the thing that let it down is a very small number of likable characters.
None as far as I can see.
The police officer was the most likable.
I didn't like her either. She was one I hated least.
Yeah. I quite liked her as a character. I don't think the actress did her much of a much justice though. Because when she was running around, I thought she doesn't look like she's talented at chasing people down. She just looked like she was going for a jog. She didn't look like she was putting a lot of effort into the run. And if you're a police officer, really speaking, especially, you know, you think that she'd be a bit more sort of urgent. But she just seemed to be doing a jog all the time, and she didn't seem to have any sense of urgency. So the only thing I thought with that character was the acting wasn't great. The other characters, they're all acted fantastically. I think the acting is really, really good in it, apart from her.
Okay.
But they're not likable characters. You know, you've got all these women who are bad people, and you expect a show about a bunch of escaped convicts. They're not going to be nice people, but they've got no redeemed qualities either. They're just all horrible people.
Yeah.
I think the only character that's not really, you know, meant to be a bad guy is one of the prison guards, who's a male who is portrayed as a snivelling.
Drew Buchanan. He's Thomas Turgoose, who's appeared in lots of these dramas.
I'm pretty sure he's been in like Game of Thrones and stuff.
I think he
like
was.
That.
He was in This Is England, all those sorts of drama-y things.
But he's very much portrayed as a snivelling weakling, as a lot of men are portrayed in this show as either bad guys or snivelling weaklings.
Who's the guy who turns up in the second episode? I was losing interest. There's a bloke who joins them.
He's on the planet that they first land on. He's just living there. I don't think there's much said about him, but he says he's like a pirate type character. Yeah. You know, he's a bit of an outlaw. And he just gets roped in with them and goes with them. It felt very forced, you know, for that. There's a lot of stuff in this story that it's like, this is happening because the script needs to continue. You know, there's not much that kind of feels natural in the show. So it's not a great show, and it's not something I'm going to continue to watch. It's very average. It reminded me a lot of Blake 7 with a bit of The 100.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere without the monsters, I had a lot of Pitch Black.
Yeah.
with Vin Diesel, that kind of vibe of it, because you had the sandstorm and stuff coming in. And there is this sort of extra storyline about the mother and father of the police officer. You know, you think the father's dead or something, but he's actually in charge of the resistance that's fighting against this sort of corporate leader group. And so there's a lot that could be going on behind it, but I just have no interest in seeing what's coming.
Well, I was the same. I mean, the things I like about it, it looks brilliant. I mean, for a British science fiction series, as I say, I love to support British genre stuff, and I wish I could be more positive about this, because we don't get a British spaceship show. That's just unheard of.
Yeah.
And it's got a decent cast. I mean, Eleanor Tomlinson, who was in Poltergeist, she was in that ropey War of the Worlds thing that was on last year. There's lots of other people whose names I don't particularly recognise. But, I think they're strong actors, and the visuals are fantastic. It really looks, you know, it's up there with the best of what the American TV stuff does, and I think the visuals are great. But I just could not get over the fact that I did not like anybody at all in there. There's nobody to root for. The Blake 7 thing was inexcusable, because the whole first episode is really just a modernised version of that. Almost beat for beat in terms of the story. She's framed, Blake was framed, go on a spaceship full of convicts, he went on a spaceship full of convicts, they rebelled and took control of the ship. The only difference is in Blake 7, they found an alien derelict space super space vehicle which they took over. That's the only difference, but otherwise it's exactly the same. This is why I think that they couldn't get the rights to Blake 7 or lost the rights and just rewrote it. But it's just everybody is so unpleasant and shouting, and the main sort of female criminal character,
see, I thought her acting was really good.
The acting is fine, but so I said this to you last night, I honestly felt anxious watching it, because they're all so angry and shouting at me from the screen.
Yeah.
The woman Tula Quick, the gang leader, played by Sharon Duncan Brewster, the look on her face all the time is just hateful.
It's a scowl.
I
understand that is the characters, but the writing should have someone in there.
And I don't know if they soften as it goes on. I can't imagine that she would soften into anything.
I can't see her
softer than granite.
I imagine her dying by episode 3 because she was so ruthless.
Yeah. And their daughter, it was an interesting idea that her dreadlocks come alive like Medusa, which is quite interesting, quite a good visual. But again, so angry all the time. And the other woman, who is the prisoner that she captures in the first episode, it's her. Fuck this. And it's effing and blinding all the time. And it's almost as if it was written by 16-year-olds. You think, oh, great, let's have this. No, 16-year-old feminists. We think, oh, great, let's have these really strong women. And they swear all the time, and all men are shit. In our third episode, and I stopped halfway through the third episode, they go to refuel or something. There's some bloke working in this refinery or something. Well, please don't hurt me. Oh, that hurts. It's like making him the wimpiest possible male character you could have.
And we've already got one of them as part of this.
Yeah. Thomas Turgoose.
And cooperative crew.
I just found it horrible. I just found it...
And it was the same with the guy that framed the police officer. You know, he sat there and started crying. Yeah. And so a lot of the men are very much depicted as weak and
Neil Maskell, who plays him, he's the local framer. He's a good actor. He's been in things like The Kill List and Utopia. So he's very good. And there was that terrible line where he's talking to the woman and you're not just ruining the world, you're ruining the universe. What? How does that happen then? Do you know how big the universe is?
The script is very weak.
I think it's a weak script. I think the acting is good for what it is, but I just don't like these people. And I think it just, rule one in any drama or any work of fiction, you've got to have somebody that you're interested in following. Yeah. The cop woman is less horrible than the rest of them, but I don't really care.
Each of the convicts seem very copy and paste, and then add personality here.
Eleanor Tomlinson's character, Candy Skov King, an alien from the Orion Galaxy in debt to Tula, she's sort of a bit nuts, a bit sort of weird.
She's kooky.
Yeah, you know. Kooky, and behaves a bit weird. Yeah. And she's got this forked tongue that comes out every now and again. And then there's this woman, Natasha O'Keefe, playing Emma Greaves, who's a prisoner, who's almost like a Hannibal Lecter type with this Klingon. And there's a lot of subplots, there's a lot of interesting things happening, but because I don't like any of these people, I don't want to stress myself out by watching
it. Well, I know if any of these characters... I mean, let's take Walking Dead, for example. When Dale, spoiler alert, dies in Walking Dead, I was devastated because he was a great character. Yeah. I think if any of these characters died, I probably wouldn't give two fucks, really. No. I'd be like, okay, that character's gone. When's the next one going? But none of the main cast have died.
No.
There's no sort of danger. It's like they've got plot protection.
Yeah.
You know, like these characters are probably going to live. The only one I suspect I feel would die would be the security guard, the prison guard.
Well, they seem to be building up. There was something in the third episode, this is when I stopped, about him and his backstory or something. Mm. There was suddenly this sort of sad music, yeah. And I thought... Oh,
as soon as someone starts giving their backstory stuff, you know that the male part of the main cast.
You know, and I don't want to sound like a jaded old white bloke fed up with women's things. I've no problem with the fact that it's a women-led series, but let's not make them so bloody hateful and detestable. I just find them so unlikable, and it's very hard to watch any series when you want all the characters to die as soon as possible and end the thing. I want the spaceship to explode.
Let's take things like a Marvel film, for instance, Iron Man. Imagine if Tony Stark was just hateable.
Yeah.
Thing is, he is in the first thing, he's not a nice guy, but he's still got charm and charisma. Then he progresses to be a decent person quite quickly, you know, when he's working with, I was forgetting, the guy who he makes the first Iron Man suit with.
I can't remember his name.
Yo something, I think it is, but... Anyway, he's he learns to become a better person. There's none of them have begun to learn to be better people.
I mean, there are eight episodes.
The girl with the sort of dreadlocks, she seems to have some kind of redeemable qualities.
She seems to have a bit more restraint about
her. But she seems more controlled by her mother, sort of thing.
So her mother is less constantly...
Again, another subplot type thing there. Yeah. But I got no interest in seeing where it goes. After episode three, I thought, I'm bored of you.
Well, I thought, because I knew you'd watch three episodes, and last night I thought, I'll try the third episode just so I'm on the same page as you. But by halfway through, I was like, oh, no, these women are just stressing me out too much. And it is not just that. If it was men behaving the same way, I think I don't like any
just
of you
constantly
people.
Constantly hectic, don't like you guys. Yeah. What's the point?
And I honestly think in any drama, you've got to be interested in the people and care about them. And why should I care about these horrible, sweary people?
Well, if a character like dies or does something great, you want to kind of pump your fist in the air and go, I'm glad my favourite character just did that. This that has none of that feeling. Yeah. It's like, oh, that character did something. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it may well be by episode eight, they're all holding hands and having a big birthday party and singing songs. But, you know, by episode three, there's no sign of that. And I think you've got to have some sort of character progression. Yeah. So not for me. Not for me. It looks fantastic. It looks they spent a lot of money on it. And I'm pleased to see British television doing something like this. One of the clues for me looking at the credits, because I often look at the credits, things, it's usually a name I recognise. I don't know anybody who's involved in this. There's nobody with any pedigree on television. I'm sure they've all obviously done stuff. But I think, I don't know any of these people. How have they come to do this thing? I don't quite understand. I haven't looked into it to find out where it's all come from. Perhaps I have to do some research. But I just found it honestly stressed me out.
Nine out of ten for it?
Two.
I was going to give it a four.
Yeah.
Because it's not quite average for me. It's not something I think, it's okay. It was all right, but not something I would go back
to. I'm giving it this two for its visual look, because it looks brilliant.
Yeah.
But I can't give marks to any of the rest. I didn't like any of the rest of it. I don't like this. Okay, there's a lot of things to be resolved, and I quite like the fact that they're seeding lots of things. But because I don't like the characters, I don't care what the resolutions of these things are, because I just want them all to die horribly.
The thing is, what's interesting about that is that's your personal choice, because somebody else could watch it and go, I love these characters, and they could be right into it.
And this isn't because it's all a women-led thing. I've got no problem with that. I think that's fine if you do it the right way. I don't think this does it the right way, though. It's just too blatantly sort of, strong women! Yeah, it's all we're all having, strong women, but you've got to have likeable characters, and I just don't like these people. Simple as that. And if I don't like them, I don't care about them. I ain't going to watch their television programme. So up yours, Intergalactic. It's on Sky One now if you want to watch it. Friday night at 9 o'clock. You can watch the whole damn lot on Now TV. Good luck to you.
Should we do another TV review?
Do you think we should after that?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully this one's going to be a bit more positive.
Well, if it is, it's going to be on you.
Jupiter's Legacy!
Jupiter's Legacy.
This is a superhero series. What a fantastic idea.
I know.
Which has appeared on the Netflix channel. This is based on a comic book by Mark Miller, who created Kick-Ass, of course. And it's developed by Stephen DeKnight, based on a comic created by Mark Miller and Frank Quitely. Stars Josh Duhamel, Ben Daniels, Leslie Bibb, Eleanor Kampouris, and various other people. In the mid-20th century, a former businessman called Sheldon Sampson travels to an uncharted island of the Atlantic Ocean where he, his brother Walter, and four others receive superpowers. He then creates a superhero team, and the guiding ideals of this team, never kill anyone, never interfere in political matters, remains unchanged over the century of his adventures as the Utopian, who's basically Superman.
Yeah.
However, the next generation of superheroes, which includes his children, don't have the same ideals, and they don't see anything wrong with them killing people. And that's the sort of the core crux of the story, this two generations of superheroes who have different moralities.
Where have we seen this before?
Everywhere.
Exactly. That's the problem with this. And this show has the ability to be great, but because it feels like a copy and paste of so many other shows, it's hard to kind of get excited for it. Mm-hmm. None of the characters appear very different to others. Nothing seems overly exciting about it. You know, because you start when you see three kids playing, pretending superheroes, and then the girl gets a bit frustrated. She said, one of the boys said, "Oh, you missed me. She screams and lets out this sort of screaming power,
yeah.
And then her father comes down, who is the Utopia. He kind of says, "Oh, you use your powers, it's very, very naughty." And then it cuts to the future. Now, right at the beginning, I thought, what the hell timeline is this? Where the hell are we? What time frame are we in? Because, you know, you're seeing, you know, classic cars or classic American cars and stuff like that. So it didn't kind of specify very well of where we are in sort of history. But it gets to the point where the daughter, she's off doing modelling and stuff like that. She's a heavy drinker and all this
stuff. She's a rebel. Teenage rebel.
The son is struggling to live up to the shadow of the Utopia, which is his father. Exactly. That's how it very much feels. But there's this character, Doctor something, I forgot his name now, but he's all sort of bulky. So he looks a bit like Doomsday from the Justice League film. He's been in prison, but then there's like a copy of him there, and the son punches him in the face and kills him.
This book looks like Thanos, is that him?
Yeah. And this thing kicks off. It's just such a overused story, as we were saying before about oversaturated superhero sort of models.
This is dealing with same, very similar themes to Invincible,
The Boys,
Umbrella Academy. Possibly things like the Doom Patrol, which I never watched.
Stuff that was in Marvel.
Yeah. You know. And when this came on, I thought within 5 minutes, this just seems a bit tired.
Yeah.
There's not much life. It's as if they're making this because they've been asked to make this thing. Mm. But it doesn't look as if there's any passion in it. No. The writing is flat. The acting is weak.
Very, very, very weak.
The costumes are terrible. And it's terrible stick-on beards.
Yeah.
You notice that, I think it's the Utopian, Josh Duhamel. The beard just looks like they've just found some just cat kind of hair, just on, stuffed like, it on his face.
Oh, grab that Santa Claus beard over there. Put
stick
it
on his face.
Yeah.
That's the impression you get the whole series. It's very lackluster.
Yeah.
There's nothing new. Well, it's not dealing with anything new.
There's a very long scene, I think, in the second episode where he sat there talking to his daughter, and they had this whole back and forth about bagels, and they sat there talking, and she's constantly bickering with him, saying, you're attacking me. It's like, I'm not. And I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, this is the most unexciting conversation I've ever seen on TV.
Because there's no twinkle to it. There's no humor.
There's no passion.
There's no wit. There's no sly little
And when
comments.
You've got other superhero stuff like Umbrella Academy, which looks fantastic, plays all the actors are great. You've got The Boys, which is like over the top and grotesque and just, you know, a really well-told story. This does not live up to any of these other things. You know, superhero movies and series, they are. I mean, Marvel's going to keep going because they're the kind of sort of parent of
these. The front runners. They are.
And the other ones that didn't. And yeah, they might start going downhill because of the oversaturation.
Well, still, as I said a couple of times in this episode, I worry that people watch this and think, oh, Marvel, more Marvel rubbish. Well, no, it's not. One, Marvel don't do rubbish. B, this isn't Marvel.
So far. Fingers crossed the future, you know, isn't going to go, because we don't know where the future's going to go, because we've got a whole new host of heroes now.
Yeah.
But
this, I watched two episodes. I just don't care about this. It's
a very flatline superhero show where I've just finished watching Invincible.
Yeah, I have.
And that's exciting, fast paced.
That last episode was like wow.
You know, just watching, that father and son sort of fight. It's great.
That's animation. That had more passion and life and interesting characters than this has.
Talking of superhero stuff for the oversaturation, I also managed to watch the Justice League animated film.
Oh yes, the new one.
World War II.
World War Society.
Justice Society. World War II.
Yeah.
And I was so uninspired by it because it is basically a sort of alternative thing to Flashpoint Paradox. Mm. You know, it's set during World War II, a couple of different characters, but it's almost like they've just gone for it's Wonder Woman, Aquaman are fighting. The Flash has gone back in time, but he's gone to a different thing, and there's other characters there, and it's just so unexciting. And I thought, when they're having their big fight, it's just characters being punched through buildings, sliding across the concrete, flying back up. And I thought, this is very DC, and I'm very upset that I'm starting to feel this way about DC, because, you know, the final fights don't lead to anything exciting anymore. It's just punch, fly away, just land, scrape across the concrete, get up, dash towards and punch back. And
I think it always was with DC that the live action films were a bit wobbly, but you always liked the animated films. They always seem to be how to do those characters. Now they've lost that as well.
I very much feel, because, you know, it's nice that they've got the Justice Society sort of name on there, but the problem is, it's pretty much Justice League Flashpoint Paradox. It's very uninspired, very unexciting. When it was on, it was like I wasn't even watching it. I was looking through it.
Well, I was going to watch it, but you put me off.
I was, and the thing is, I'm the one that likes DC. I'm the one that likes these films.
But I don't get me wrong, I love those characters, because they're the ones I was reading before Marvel. But I just think they've been so poorly served.
Yeah, and this recent animated film really... I felt like I was let down, and I don't know if it's because of the oversaturation of all of these superhero movies, series and stuff like that, but we had the same thing with the zombie genre. Every Tom, Dick and Harry wanted to do a zombie genre based thing. Some were creative, like Cargo and stuff like that, but then others were just so basic, like The Walking Dead became Z Nation. I know it's a bit more over the top and fun, but it's still just another zombie
there was that series. One I can't remember the name, which is coming back. It was a Netflix one.
Train to Busan?
No.
Was it a series?
Dark Days or Black Days or something, which was like the beginning of a zombie outbreak, and it was done very much almost like a documentary style thing with people running through. I can't remember what it was called now, but that's coming back.
Don't remember that.
I don't think you saw that, but that was very good, so I'd advise you to catch up with it. But of course, you need to know what it's called.
We had the zombie genre, which is now dried up. Walking Dead is still trying to push it. But then, having said
that, Army of the Dead is out next week. Zack Snyder's new zombie film with Dave Bautista.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
2.5 hours long.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
2.5 hours of a zombie flick. Okay. We'll see how that goes. George Romero's probably rolling in his grave going, right, I'm sorry I brought these creatures to life.
I think the early reports are it's quite good, but come on, Zack.
Well, this is Zack Snyder we're talking about. It's going to be kicked in slow motion,
dark,
gritty atmosphere and stuff like that. But yeah, I think the superhero genre is now going that way. Marvel, I think, are the only ones that, you know, can stand, because they're a Goliath of...
Well, they've got a lot of traction behind them. They've done a lot of good stuff that's gone down well, and I just hope that people are able to differentiate.
And the fact there's a long-running movie series really, really helps.
And characters that people are invested in. And I think the fact that we've now gone off Jupiter's Legacy says probably more than we need to say about Jupiter's Legacy. And I really have nothing else to say about it. I thought the fight at the end of the first episode was quite good. The way those things are done.
But again, it was very DC. One punch, fly away. Yeah. Grab and hold down. Yeah. Punch, fly away. Yeah. Punch. You know, it's just not exciting anymore. There's no intensity to it.
I think visually it was done well, the effects, but that's the minimum standard you expect in these things. If you're doing a superhero series...
These days, TV series need to look as good as movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, shows like Game of Thrones started that. Yeah. You know, you watch Game of Thrones, you think, this looks like I'm really in Westeros. Yeah. It looks fantastic. So you have to, I mean, because even Doctor Who has started going that way. Oh, the long shots and the, you know, but the
seconds. They specifically want that they got the cameras that make it look cinematic.
Now. Yeah. So, you know, TV series have gone that way. Yeah. It's no longer a case of, you can tell this is a TV series because it doesn't look as fancy as a movie. Yeah. So you expect these things. But you also expect it to be a good show, an exciting show, and this just didn't deliver. And it's been a very negative show so far.
I know, and it's not going to get much better. I think this is part of what they call the Millerverse, because this Mark Miller's created all these different characters in the comics. But on the basis
it doesn't have to be a verse, though, does it? It doesn't have to be a verse. It could just be its own thing, please.
And I heard that Mark Miller, when he created this, and I think it was created a while back, I think it predates a lot of the things we've since. It's just taken a long time to come to the screen.
Yeah.
So unfortunately now it looks tired, whereas it might once have been innovative. I've done 2 episodes. I'm not going back to this.
No.
Definitely not.
No, I'm done.
And I'm going to give it 2 out of 10.
3 out of 10.
Yep.
Disappointing.
I mean, I didn't expect much from it, because when I read about it, I expected more from it, but I didn't expect much more from it. When I read about it, I thought, well, this has been done. This has been bad, all this. Or perhaps it'll be something different. Within 10 minutes, it was like, no, there's no energy. there's no passion in this. It doesn't feel as if anybody really wants to do something, you know, that punches you in the face. It was just, here we are. And I just didn't like it very much, personally. So I'm afraid it has to be a 2 out of 10 for me. If you want to watch Jupiter's Legacy, it is all available on the Netflix channel. 8 episodes. Let us know what you think, because perhaps you enjoyed it. Perhaps you enjoyed Intergalactic. There's no accounting for taste. If you did, contact us by email at tvzoneplus@mail.com or leave a message on our friendly but barely used Facebook page. Just say hello. Let us know what you think of these things, because we didn't like them.
Hey, Paul, put that gun down. Don't shoot the pilot.
What do we want? TV Zone Plus. When do we want it? Every fortnight.
This is the relatively new feature that we started a couple of episodes ago.
Skipped last week, so we're back with it this week.
Yeah, which I've decided over the last couple of days, it's going to be just 6 episodes of this.
Okay.
I think so, yeah. because I think we'll cover the most, you know, interesting, but I don't know, we'll see how it goes. I've sent us both away to watch the thing, I'd not seen it before, a 1971 TV pilot for a TV series, which never happened, called Earth 2.
Now, I got excited by this.
I know you feel.
Because I went onto Google, or YouTube, sorry, I typed in Earth 2 pilot, and it popped up with a bunch of shorts of a show with Clancy Brown in it.
Clancy Brown.
1994, and I was like, ooh, I like Clancy Brown, this looks good.
And then I said you...
And you sent me a link, I clicked on it, and I went, this isn't the Clancy Brown thing,
that's
is it?
Right. that series wasn't bad, actually. It only ran for 1 year. I remember it was shown on Sky One, I think. It was quite
A lot of people in the comments and stuff were saying, oh, this was actually a really, really good show, really great. I started watching this 70s
which wasn't quite the
show,
same sort of thing.
Which wasn't quite the same thing.
No, I think the idea is quite interesting. And bearing in mind, this was 1971. This was a couple of years after Star Trek had fizzled out. This was, man had already gone on the moon. So the moon missions were still happening. And I think this was an attempt to do a sort of a serious science fiction
It was like
series.
A realistic sci-fi.
It was almost like a documentary style thing in a way. It was a realistic thing about what might happen with this. And I think there's even reference to things like shuttles and the technology which we now have.
Yeah.
Which was, and it was quite interesting. It sort of foresaw certain things. But I thought it started off quite well with the spaceship taking off, and there was like
a guy with a gun
trying to shoot at it. Oh, it could be quite interesting.
I wouldn't imagine that one shot would have done a great deal though.
Not really, it depends what he was launching really.
But the prospect of it is they're sending this rocket into space, and it's going to create a space station, and they're going to call it Earth 2, which is a place for people to live, and it was meant to be for peace and all this kind of stuff. And it gets produced, made really nice, everybody seems happy. Then these characters turn up on there.
This new family moves up.
New family. They move up there. They have a gander around, but he seems to want to take a bit more control. He's got an idea of a weapon sort of thing rather than anything. But they discover that there's a sort of nuclear warhead floating around in space that passes Earth 2 often. And it turns out it's from the Red China. And they're refusing to move it. So the crux of the episode is them defusing it, making sure it doesn't blow up.
Because the Chinese say if they tamper with it anyway, they'll set it off. Yeah. Which will cause, obviously, catastrophe on the Earth.
But the main guy who turned up, he said, nope, we're going to deactivate that. I don't feel comfortable having it there. Things go wrong continuously from there, and they have to make sure that it doesn't blow up over the Earth's atmosphere. And that's pretty much what the show is about. It was an hour and a half of that, which I think that was the problem with it. Nothing really happened until like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I'm just looking at people having meetings and discussing stuff. Nothing exciting really happened. There were no fisticuff fights or anything like that.
There was no action in it.
No, it was just meetings and talkings. And they were like, oh, we'll have a D&D.
Well, this is what they called it. Instead of having laws and things, they had these open discussions, more democratic.
Yeah.
And what I quite liked, one of the few things I quite liked about it, when they had the meetings, they had captions coming up on the screen saying, this is not policy, this is an opinion, sort of trying to keep it open, so it was more democratic than just a meeting with people, you know, bossing other people. It was like, this is not open to debate, this is, and I thought that was quite an interesting
way
to put that
across. Yeah, and they had the vote then, didn't they, and see who wins.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much what the whole show was.
Yeah.
until they start going out into the ship in the end to sort of collect this warhead. But it was so uninspiringly exciting. No, the thing is, at one point, when they see the warhead, the guy flying the ship, he points. And he points. And then he looks at the other guy and looks back, continues to point. And then he slowly lowers his hand. And I was like, wow, that was exciting. And it's like, half the time, it's like 10 seconds, 15 seconds of just looking at the same shot of them getting a little bit closer. Slowly getting closer. And then when it got to the point where they had to be fast and intense, because they're like, right, well, because this woman on the ship, she said, she'd been listening. And they say, well, this let's just shoot it into the sun.
Yeah.
You know, they're discussing. She hears that and she goes and shoots it into the sun. And it's like, what the hell are you doing? She said, well, the window was pointing at the thing, so I just shot it at the sun.
Yeah, and it's and the bloke is, and it shows how different things are now.
Yeah.
He's almost like pats on the head and says, oh, bless you. Just because he's pointing at the sun doesn't mean he's going to go to the sun. And she goes, don't!
Yeah. She almost like, it is very much like that. Yeah, you can see how cinematography and stuff has changed. And rightly so, really, because she was treated as like the, you're such a woman. You're such a woman.
Go make us some tea. Oh,
welcome to the 70s. But it was
very dull, but I didn't actually dislike it. I thought it was a nice attempt to do something not silly in science fiction, to do a realistic science fiction thing, which makes you realise that life in space is probably quite dull, if that's what it would be like.
There's a lot more they could have done to make it a bit more exciting.
But I think the whole purpose was not to be exciting.
The thing is, it's like an hour and 10 minutes of the beginning and then 20 minutes of end. There was no midsection.
It was a pilot for a series. So I think, didn't become a series.
But
and
I you
can sort of see why. And if you want a series, you have a bit more going on. Okay, the threat is quite, it's a big threat. But there's no sense of drama about it.
Well, there's a bit where this rocket is, going into Earth's atmosphere. And they're like, if it reaches a certain heat, it's going to explode.
Yeah.
So you think, oh, they're going to get there quick. But no, you're just sat there watching the two guys flying, not saying a word, barely moving. Yeah. And you can see particles hitting the ship, and you can hear the particles hitting. Yeah. That's all you can hear, and that's all you're watching is these lights hitting this screen. And the little models look great.
Yeah, I thought the model was quite good for the time.
But usually it is in the 70s and stuff. Because
it was all models. This is all way before CGI, so it was all models.
The thing is, you've got Thunderbirds and stuff, so you're going to take your model ideas from all of that, all that history, and they look great. But because nothing happened.
Yeah.
The fastest the ship moved was when they needed to get a bit closer.
Yeah.
Because it was moving so slow, and then there's this one point, just like, I'm going to grab it now. And the ship kind of zoomed quickly a little bit. I just don't think there was much care behind the scenes on this show. And the script was so convoluted with big words and stuff. And you're thinking, I know you're trying to make this realistic. Yeah. I get that vibe. But not every Tom, Dick, and Harry is going to know this.
Yeah.
So you're just saying stuff where people are just hearing sounds rather than actual
words. I think
it was
a worthy attempt to do a realistic science fiction thing, but I think you can't really do that because it's not interesting enough.
No, I think everything was purposely slow, as it would be.
But again, 1971, the pace of television was totally different. You wouldn't do anything like this these days. You would not do it.
The thing is, the last show we watched with the guy and the watch going invisible and stuff
Gemini
like that.
That was great.
There's excitement going on right the way through. Car chases. I know you can't have car chases in space. But they go down to Earth at one point and they're in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And they have this meeting and it's the Russians, the Americans and the Red Chinas.
Yeah.
And I'm just sat there thinking, are they going to do something or are they literally just chatting?
They're just going to talk.
Because they're chatting. They're basically, it would be like somebody watching us right now.
Yeah.
We're not doing anything exciting to watch. We're just talking. So you can listen to what we're saying.
Yeah.
But to watch us, it's like watching Big Brother.
Yeah.
Watching two people sat on a chair. That's not exciting either.
No.
Although most people would disagree because apparently reality TV is the best thing in the world. It just was not exciting. Nothing really happened. And even when it was an intense atmosphere, you didn't get that feeling of intensity.
I agree with everything you say, but I didn't dislike it. I wouldn't watch it again. I'm glad they didn't make a series of it. But I'm glad I've seen it because I've heard about it and thought, I wonder what that's like.
It's interesting to see history of TV, and that's what's so good about this segment.
Yeah, it's interesting to see those little diversions in the genre that don't go anywhere, these dead ends. And there's a lot of these pilot things. So there may be more than six. I've got six in mind.
I know what you're saying, but you change your mind about it.
I often change my mind. Do I change my mind? No, I don't. Do I change my mind?
Yeah, maybe you do.
I don't know. No, I don't. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Anyway, I'm going to give this 4 out of 10 because I thought it was all right.
I'm giving it a 2.
Okay.
So I didn't think it was all right at all, to be honest.
Fair enough. Yeah. But, I did stop after an hour because I thought this is too dull to watch the rest of. Then I went back because I wanted to see the end of it. So
I watched 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Then went back to it.
Yeah.
I was glad it was over.
It wasn't like Intergalactic where I just wanted it, and in fact, I wanted myself to end. I wanted to get to the end of this because I was interested enough to find out how it resolved, but it never quickened my pulse for one moment, I'm afraid. That's on YouTube if you want to see the pilot of Earth 2.
You okay?
Yes, somebody just sent me something amusing.
Scott's Games Corner!
Oh yeah, you get on with your Games Corner. I'll just see what this is. Right, Scott, what's in your corner?
You will let me have my jingle, thank you. Okay, so today on Scott's Games Corner, I'm going to be talking about two games. I'll start with a game called Secret Neighbor. So there was a game released called Hello Neighbor, where you play as a child and you have to break into your neighbor's home because he's suspected of being a villain. So you have to creep into his home, go into the basement and find he's kidnapped someone, so you have to find that child. They released Secret Neighbor, which is a 6-player experience where 5 of you play as investigative kids, sort of like a Scooby gang, and one child is actually a disguised neighbor, but you don't know who that is in your group. So you have to work together to find the 6 keys to unlock the basement to get to the exit, while at the same time one of the 6 kids is actually the neighbor, and the neighbor's job is to capture each one of these children. So you have to use your cunning and use your convincing techniques to say, I'm not the killer. Try and get a kid to go with you somewhere, grab them, and capture them. And that's the aim of the game. And it's really fun because you, when you play the game, you can speak to your friends over the microphone, but it's got location speak. So if I moved away from you, I would get quieter and quieter and quieter until I was out of earshot. So the aim of it then is for the secret neighbor to take somebody away so they get quieter and quieter. So when they're out of distance, change into the neighbor, grab them and capture them. And yeah, you've got to capture all 6 kids before they find all 6 of the keys. And it's really, really good fun. It's quite scary. I've screamed a few times.
Oh, you big wuss.
Because at one point I went into a room with my friend Morgan. Got very excited. I found a key. I was like, great, I got a key. I turn around and now the neighbour can set off traps and close certain doors that the kids can't. And the gate was down. I thought, oh, that's weird. And then out of the shadows came this tall, lurching neighbour. And I screamed. I screamed good and proper, and I'm not ashamed of it because it made me jump. And it was great, but it's an absolutely good fun experience, especially if you're going to play with your friends, because you're sat there, you might do something, your friends say, you're the neighbour, but you're not, and you're trying to convince them you're not, when all the while your neighbour is the neighbour is somebody else and they're capturing somebody else. Really good fun, really good experience, and not that expensive, I believe, either. I believe it was... I think it was less than £20, which is quite a nice price for brand new games. Really good fun, and recommended for anybody that likes to play games with their friends, which can lead to them having a discussion about who they think this secret killer is. Good fun. The second game is Hood Outlaws and Legends. Now this game is a 4v4 VE.
I have no idea what that means, really.
So it's 2 teams of 4. And AI characters, so artificial intelligence, so computer controlled characters. So each of the four, each of the 2 teams of 4, their task is to sneak into the castle, steal the key from the sheriff, find the vault, open the vault, get the box, and take it to an extraction point. And it's the first team to do that successfully. It's heavily, heavily inspired by Robin Hood. Now, there's nothing that says it is Robin Hood, but you do play as Hood, who is an archer. Marianne, who is, she's like a stealthy character. You've got John, who is Little John, who is a big brute character. And then you've got Took, who is Tuck.
Wasn't he in Lord of the Rings?
Took was, yeah. Pelican and Took. And yeah, so it's, each play as one of these characters. You can double up, but you're better off having each of their skills in your team. And yeah, you try and grab the chest. The sheriff walks around, grab his key. But what's really nice is every time you load into a game, the chest, the vault, and the sheriff change locations. So you can't start the game and go, I know exactly where the sheriff is. He's changed to a different location, so you have to look for them while at the same time fighting against the other team. Very, very good fun. There's a few things that need fixing in the game with future updates, like the matchmaking system. I was getting put up against people that were level 88 and I was level 2, and such like that. Some of the blocking mechanisms need a bit of fixing, and the targeting systems need fixing. But overall, very, very good game. That was $24.99. So again, not a bad price considering a lot of games these days
coming out. So what you're saying is two good quality games for less than 50 notes.
For less than 50 quid, yeah. I am aware as well the Star Wars Republic Commando has come out on the PS4 as well. That's $11.99. Very excited to play that. That's an old sort of Clone Wars game that I talked about last time. That's out, and I will be getting that to give it a go, and I can come back with what I thought of that one. And my brother has purchased the Mass Effect trilogy. And the Mass Effect games were released back on the in the earlier console, the PS3, the Xbox 360, and PC. And it's a long-running trilogy story where you play as Commander Shepard, but you shape the story.
Sorry?
Commander Shepard.
Oh, I thought you said Command A Shepard.
No, you're Commander Shepard.
Right, okay.
You shape the story as you go along. So every time you meet someone new, a dialogue option opens up and you choose the path of the dialogue. So you can choose to speak politely, speak aggressively. You can choose which path to take. But if you go certain routes, your characters might die, they might survive, you might end up being in a relationship with them. But all three of these games are linked. So if you play the first game and you get a specific ending, because there's multiple, you can then pass that ending on to the next game and continue the story. So instead of having a set ending on the first game and the second one continue, it's whatever ending you have chosen to get, and it continues through three games. Now that one was a full price game because it's three games in one. And they're all games that have been released, but it's got all the downloadable content on there and stuff, so it's pretty good price for your money. And that is coming out on Friday, so I'm looking forward to trying that myself.
Fab.
And yeah, that's my games corner. Three good games, two for quite a low price, and if you like the Robin Hood mythos, have a go on Hood. And don't forget, if you guys play the PlayStation and want to add me on the PlayStation, Squire Wolf Spain, SQUIRE, WOLFSBANE.
He's got this obsession with wolves, always has. Thank you for that. Another top quality games corner, I think you'd agree. What's this? I seem to hear a jingle.
The latest from the worlds of cult TV, movies, games and more, every fortnight. It's TV Zone Plus.
Keep me on my toes with these jingles, didn't
you? Naturally. That was a good jingle too. I think it's time for another TV review.
So this TV review
is... This is all down to you. This is Star Wars The Bad Batch.
The Bad Batch. This is basically replacing the Star Wars for Dummies for this one, because Paul couldn't be bothered.
No, I just didn't have time. I've been so busy.
Been so busy? What have you been busy with, Paul?
I can't say. Top secret project.
Top secret stuff. Shh,
shh. I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Okay, so The Bad Batch. Now,
what is The Bad Batch? This has arrived on Disney Plus in the last couple of weeks. First two episodes are out. I've heard of The Bad Batch. I know it's a thing associated with Star Wars. I know it's something to do with Clone Wars. I'm a newbie. I'm a dummy. I don't know anything about it. Tell me what The Bad Batch is, for God's sake. I don't have a bloody time out while you're telling me.
The Bad Batch are a collection of characters who are clones, just like the Clone Army, the rest of the Clone Army, which you've seen in Attack of the Clones and Episode 3. But they had deficiencies in their cloning process. Now, these deficiencies ended up giving each of them an individual extra strength on a certain attribute. So you've got a character called Hunter, who, as you can imagine, is a bit more perceptive than any other clone. You've got Wrecker, who is very strong. He likes to destroy stuff, but he's strong. You've got Tech, who's good at tech. You've got Oh, I've got so many different names, I can't think of them. But you've got one that's, he's just an expert with a sniper rifle. So all of these sort of deficiencies have placed them into this group called the Bad Batch, Unit 99. Other clones don't like them because they're different, because they're not clones. Yeah, you've got an entire army of the same people, these guys are different. So they get sent on missions that are ultimately not the nicest of missions. But they always come through because they have their extra ability to perform in their specialized field. Whereas every other clone works at 50%, they work at 50%, but they've got like an extra 20% on a specific skill set. So you got strength, hunting, sniping, tech, and stuff like that. Now, they made an appearance in the last season of the Clone Wars that Disney produced, probably to set up this Bad Batch TV series. And they were a great addition to this show. But now they've got their own series, where the first episode, I think, was about an hour and 20 minutes, something like that. I imagine it was meant like two episodes in one.
In all honesty, I was going to give it a go. But when I saw, I thought, I don't know if I can watch this for 70 minutes just yet.
Well, what's really nice is this starts off as Order 66 is being announced. So they start in a fight. You know, you've got some clones fighting. They've got a Jedi leader. And they're pinned down and saying, well, we're done. There's nothing we can do. So we've got reinforcements. Oh, how many? Four of them. And like, four? That's not reinforcements. And then they come down. They literally, like, in their own unique way, trash the droid group that they're running away from. But then Order 66 kicks in. But their inhibitor chips, which makes them follow the Order of 66, isn't working because they got unique system in their creation. So they don't start just shooting at the Jedi. They start protecting the Jedi. Except one of them, who has a bit more of an impact from the chip, and that's the sniper guy. He feels like he needs to be following the orders, and he's fighting against it. They then watch the progression of Order 66 take place, and all the clones start just obeying this order to turn against their Jedi friends. So they basically run away. And that's what the story is about. It's about them hiding from this new sort of empire regime and things like that. The second episode is great because in the Clone Wars series, you meet this clone that had left a long time ago, and Commander Rex from the series goes and meets him. This brings that character back, and you realize that Commander Rex left a day ago for them to come back. So it's linking really nicely with the Clone Wars series that's been there. Two great episodes so far. Only issue with the half an hour episode, it felt like they wanted to do a lot more in it. Whereas The Mandalorian did really well with their pacing and stuff of the half hour. This kind of felt like it had a bit of an issue with
the
pacing.
Is the third episode out then? Did that come out yet?
I think it's coming out soon. I don't think it's out now because I did have a look. I've been keeping an eye. But it's very, very good. The characters are great. There is a new character being introduced called Omega, who's a child. She's a clone, but it's a she. So she's a unique clone as well.
Okay.
And she has an affinity toward the Bad Batch because they're unique like her. And she escapes with them. We got a great return of Grand Moff Tarkin.
All right.
Do you know who
he
is? Peter Cushing. He's Peter Cushing. So he turns up because he's been in the Clone Wars, but he's not Grand Moff. He is an admiral. He hasn't made it to that higher status yet. We also see Forrest Whitaker's character return. He appears in Rogue One. So he's come back in this show as well. I'm not sure if he's still voiced by Forrest Whitaker or not, but... the situations on these episodes are really, really nice because it's them being told to do things and they want to follow the orders, but they're not sure about the Empire. They don't know if they want to follow the Empire's orders. They get sent to go and kill these droid insurgents, but they're not droid insurgents. So they've got a dilemma to fight against. And the sniper guy who is... he's the one that's like really conflicted about whether he should follow the orders or not. He accepts having the chip put back in properly, so he becomes another one of the sort of drone must follow the leader type thing. Really, really good show, great characters, really well made. I'm hoping episode 3 fixes the pacing, because the pacing, as I said in episode 2, was a bit lacking. Good action scenes in there though, when they're shooting at each other. Looks great. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10.
Whoa, that's a very high rating.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it.
I have a couple of questions for you about this.
Go.
One, Is this aimed at children?
Yes. Kids can. It's very much along the same vein as Clone Wars. Kids can watch it, but
presumably, you know, it hasn't got the effing and jeffing of, say, Invincible or all of that. There's nothing like that. But there isn't in Star Wars anyway, really.
No, Star Wars isn't much. No. Yeah, there might be a couple of words or something. It's,
second question.
Yeah.
Is this going to make any sense to somebody, a Star Wars dummy, for example, who hasn't watched the Clone Wars? There's no real intention of watching the Clone Wars. Could somebody like me, for example, watch this and understand it and follow it?
Yeah, because you've seen the films. You will have to have seen the films.
Yeah.
Because it's set to say at the point of Order 66, you're just following these extra characters. That's all you're doing. Everything else is
explained. Was Order 66 in the films?
That's when the clones turned against the Jedi.
Oh, right.
So execute Order 66, as the Emperor says. And he says it in this. Right. So, you know, when Yoda's on the Wookiee home planet.
What were the other 65 orders then, before that?
There's actually, I'm going to put it at the end of the trailer. There's actually a song.
Okay.
Done by Robot Chicken Star Wars.
Okay.
What all the other orders are, because he says execute Order 66, and Vader goes, but Master, what were the other 65 orders? And he starts doing the song, he goes, he starts dancing around.
As long as there's an explanation for
that. It's not a genuine explanation, but it's pretty darn funny.
Okay.
Stay
tuned after our credits for that then.
Yeah. So it's featured from the Robot Chicken Star Wars episodes. But yeah, you can definitely sit down and watch this. You don't need to have watched the Clone Wars.
Okay.
You just need to understand that they're defective clones who are good at what they do, and they try and get away from the Empire.
Okay,
that's pretty much the crux of their story.
Okay. Right. What's the animation style?
Same as the Clone Wars and Rebels, so it's CGI, mind, sort of 3D stuff.
Okay.
So think like a Disney film. Okay. That you get like Moana and stuff like that, and Frozen, but a bit more grittier because it's Star Wars.
Right. Okay, right. Well, I will see if I will think I will.
Consider, have a gander at the first episode.
I will consider thinking about watching that.
Well, that's three steps away from watching.
Yeah,
so
that's right. That's Star Wars: The Bad Batch, which is streaming. First couple of episodes, and by the time you hear this, episode 3 will be out on Disney Plus.
If it's not already out, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it may well be, because it's Thursday, so it could be out by now.
Let's go to the cinema, hypothetically. That was a good personal jingle. I like that.
Fantastic, but we'll never use it again. Yes, cinemas are back next week, we hope.
Woohoo!
We think they are. I think things are a bit confusing at the moment because the rules for cinemas in Wales seem to be slightly more complicated than everywhere else. And apparently certain chains have said they're not opening just yet. But I think Showcase, which is the nearest one to us, is opening. Because
it's actually right by where I work, so it'd be nice if I finish work and think, you know what? Watch a film.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, I could finish at 4. Ellie's still in work, or she's staying over her mother's or something.
You could liaise with me.
Yeah.
And I could come down.
Yeah.
We could do that in the summer when big films come out. I haven't decided for certain yet, but I want to go and see, because we were planning to see Godzilla vs. Kong on Monday. And I would like to sort of show my solidarity for cinema by being there at 10:45 to see the first screening. But I'm not sure if it's happening yet, because some of the cinemas might be changing their minds because there's bizarre regulations that they've introduced in Wales. But even though the cinemas aren't yet open, there are still films available, aren't there?
Yeah.
Streaming services are delivering lots of
if
films.
If I'm distance, I'm sat back.
Yeah. Back far enough.
This is Paul's moment to shine.
Sound like me in the last episode. I sounded like I was on a different planet, apparently. Anyway, first film I'm going to talk about is Stowaway, which arrived on the Netflix channel on the 22nd of April. This is a science fiction film, which, as the title might betray, is about a stowaway on board a spaceship.
Really?
Yosh. It's about a space rocket, which is on a 2-year mission to Mars. It has a crew of 3, who are played by Toni Collette, Daniel Dae Kim from Lost and Hawaii Five-O, and Anna Kendrick. And they're on this 2-year mission to go to Mars. They've got enough fuel to get to Mars and get back. But they discover that there's a stowaway on board. Now, you don't actually find out why and how he's there, but he's like a technician who's fallen unconscious in a cupboard when the ship took off and he falls out the cupboard. They find him.
That sounds more clumsy than...
It's a slightly clumsy bit of exposition. You don't quite know why he's there. But he's a nice bloke and he wants to go home. And they say, well, we can't, we're on a 2-year mission. We can't go home. So he's like, oh, shit. So he decides, well, he's got to stay with them and become part of the team. However, they then discover that there's a problem with the spaceship and there's a fault. And because of this fault, there's only enough oxygen for 3 people on board to get them to Mars and back. One of them's going to have to...
Jettison
or die or be killed or whatever. And obviously, your stowaway man, Michael Adams, last man in, he's the one who has to go. So there's an interesting moral dilemma at the core of the film about... they have to do something about this within 2 weeks, because if they go longer than 2 weeks, they're not going to have enough oxygen. So he's almost got like a 2-week window to live, but they've got to sort of make a decision about what to do within that 2 weeks. And the commander, played by Toni Collette, she's quite no-nonsense. She said, well, unfortunately, you know, he's got to die. The other two characters, Daniel Dykeman and Anna Kendrick's characters, obviously not very happy about this. But, you know, she says, we can't tell him this, we'll just have to do something. When it comes to it, they can give him like a lethal injection that will kill him. Of course, he's quite upbeat, he's joined the crew, he quite likes being there now, and he's looking forward to going home. He's responsible for looking after his daughter who's disabled, and
so basically it forces him to have a lot of
you have sympathy for him, because he wants to get back home when he finds out where he is. You've got to take me home, I'm responsible for my sister who's living at home. But they managed to, the NASA or whoever sorts it out, and they get carers in so he can sort of cope with it. He's told that what's going to happen, and of course you've got this whole issue then about what they're going to do, and he's got, and it's quite well done. He sort of faces the fact that he's going to die and he's not going to get back home, but they don't do it. And then sort of miraculously they just, even though, and it's quite good because they're in contact with people on Earth, but you never hear the voices of people on Earth. They've got headsets on, and it gives you a nice sense of the dislocation that they're in space on this spaceship, because you don't hear the voices of the people on Earth. You just sort of go, yeah, that's fine, everything's all right, yeah, that's great. So you don't have that contact. But as Toni Collette's character, the captain, says at one point, all the sharpest brains on Earth are trying to find a way around this, find a solution. But, oh, there's no solution, we can't come up with anything. And suddenly they go, but wait a minute, we've got these frozen oxygen supplies in tanks at the top of the spaceship. Why don't we bring them down and thaw them out? Then that will give us a new oxygen supply. But all these brains on Earth never thought of that.
it sounds like it was just wedged into the script to have a solution. Well,
pretty much, yeah. Really. Anyway, Daniel Dykeman, who's not very good with heights, he and Anna Kendrick go up on spaceship. And again, unfortunately, it's the cliche, you've got the two strong women. But when the spaceship takes off, Daniel Dykeman, the only man, he's like, oh, I don't feel well. I can't cope with the loss of gravity because men are wimps. Don't forget that, men are wimps. Anyway, he goes out with Anna Kendrick to get these frozen things down. And of course, as they're bringing these things down, no, there's an asteroid storm.
Asteroid storm, yeah. So as soon as someone says, we've got to go out there, something's going to happen.
It's an asteroid storm or a sunflare or something happens. Anyway, they're compromised.
It's like, hello, cliche, how are you?
And it ends. I'm not going to say what the resolution is because people haven't seen it. But it's quite entertaining.
Sounds like a villain just plods along with it, right?
It's okay. It's sort of interesting. I think the problem is you have an interesting moral thing in the middle about how do you kill somebody.
So the thing is, if they made the film solely about that, it probably would have been better than to go for the cliche of, let's do a space walk. Well, oh no, stuff's gone wrong.
It's sort of, I don't think you got as far in Survivors, the original Survivor series, where... Yeah. A girl gets murdered and Tom Price, who's like the trampy bloke, he sort of puts it on this disabled or learning impaired bloke who's a member of the group, and he allows the group, the survivors, have to decide, you know, what do we do?
Do we make
the decision about, do we take the law into our own hands? And it's a similar dilemma here. I think Survivors did it a bit better, to be honest, because the whole episode was about that. This was like, yep, we've got no choice, we've got to kill him. Sorry about that. And I think they should have spent a little bit more time
debating it
and discussing the moral issues of how you would really react to it.
It's strange, if you build up that much sympathy for the character, it would have been nice to see that discussion unfolding.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a case of, we got to kill him. Yeah. I got an idea.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Let's do it.
Well, you have that, you know, we got to kill him, then he's one of the characters greatest tells him about it.
Don't think about something as simple as, we've actually got frozen oxygen.
Yeah. Oh, we can use that. So it all seemed a bit clunky, but I did quite enjoy it. The acting's pretty good. Toni Collette, apart from Hereditary, is always good. Can never forgive him. I'm floating. Terrible film. But yeah, it's an entertaining space pop. Well, it's nice to see a space film that it falls into what I call space adventure films.
Yeah.
Where it's not about aliens and things. It's like The Martian and Gravity. It's about a drama in space rather than a, you know,
things like Armageddon and stuff like that caliber of things.
Yeah, those sort of things which are about sort of disasters in space rather than aliens.
And you do like a disaster film.
I do like a disaster film. So this, yeah, I quite enjoyed this. It's very watchable. 6 out of 10.
Nice.
And to become a bit more up to date, couldn't be much more up to date, is Oxygen, which arrived on the Netflix channel yesterday. I looked.
Could have done with that on Stowaway.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, that's true. They could do a combination of the two. Stowaway meets Oxygen. Have you seen the film Buried with Ryan Reynolds?
I haven't seen it, but I know of it.
Yeah. I watched it once. I can't. It's a great film, but it's a very hard film to watch if, like most people, you've got a fear of... If you're claustrophobic and you've got a fear of being buried alive, which I think subliminally we probably all have that thought of being in this enclosed
space. Came out
at
the same time as that 127 Hours, didn't
Yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah, similar.
And it had that same sort of vibe.
You have to... You know, your fate is in your own hands. You have to do something. This is a sort of similar. It's not quite as claustrophobic, but it's based on a similar thing. It's actually a French-American film. It's directed by Alexandre Aya, who's directed films like Crawl, which you wouldn't have seen, about the crocodiles, which came out a couple of years ago, because you don't like them big fishy things.
No.
It's about this woman, played by Melanie Laurent. It's practically a one-hand of the film. She wakes up in a medical cryogenic unit. She doesn't know who she is, why she's there. She's in this box.
Never had that before.
No. She's in this box that's basically no larger than a coffin. She's running out of oxygen. When she wakes up, you know, she's got a computer system that's talking to her. The computer just says, do you want a sedative? Because she's getting quite stressed. And the oxygen, when she wakes up, is 33%, and it's dropping down. You've got to sort out, you know, we need to sort this out.
Have they got any frozen oxygen tanks?
They have no frozen oxygen tanks, unfortunately. Well, actually, it's funny you should say that. So she's trying to remember who she is. And she gets a little sort of, not flashbacks, but images of her past coming into her head. And she can see a man who she thinks is her husband, and she can see this woman who's sort of a lecturer or something. And people are communicating across the radio, and they want to help her, but they don't seem to be able to help her. And there's one woman who's offering her, saying, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. There's certain things around this, but you've got to do this before you get to 2% oxygen. You either refreeze yourself or you find some solution, because if you leave it till 2% of oxygen, there won't be enough oxygen. Because basically they're on a spaceship, and she discovers that she's one of hundreds or thousands of people on a spaceship traveling to a new planet. And they're going to be revived when they get to the new planet, but they need a certain amount of oxygen available to be able to be revived. And if she drops under 2%, she won't have enough. She won't survive the awakening for cryogenic.
It's so hard these days to make a unique story, isn't
it? Well, yeah, this isn't unique because it's got lots of things we've seen before.
Yeah.
But about 45 minutes, 1 hour, it's quite a long film. It's just under 2 hours, hour and 50 minutes. And you sort of think, well, what is she? And you suddenly get flashbacks of who she is. When you realise, when she realises who she is, that's quite clever. Because you see the link to the people she's communicating with.
To oxygen.
She's running out of oxygen. And there's actually a jump scare moment where she discovers that the spaceship's actually been hit by asteroids.
Those damn blasted asteroids.
Damn pest. This is why I never want to go into space. You can't move a bloody asteroid.
Yeah, funny though, really. Because the science behind asteroids...
It's like hemorrhoids, isn't it?
But the thing is, if space is weightless, wouldn't the asteroid just bump off you?
I don't know. I think they go very fast, don't they? Like,
yeah, but that's only when they get grabbed by gravity.
No, I think if they're... You
know, when an asteroid flies across our planet, it's because the gravity is like swinging them like a slingshot. So out in space, aren't they just floating balls?
I think they're hurtling through space, and then when they hit something, presumably. Dr. Mount has spoken. I know I'm not Brian Cox, but I'm doing my best.
There's no weight out
I don't know. I don't know. Don't ask me. I'm just talking about the film. Do I have to ring Patrick Moore, even though he's dead? I'll look it up in a minute and find out the last one.
Two space films that you're talking about. Both have asteroids.
I think the other one might have been a solar flare now, I think, but it might have been asteroids. I'm not sure.
It's still the same sort of thing.
Anyway, the spaceship has been hit by asteroids, and some of the people have been killed. and you see these sort of bodies floating through space, and one of them is like his head's been caved in, and this thing sort of comes into the little window where she's looking out, and that's quite a sort of moment. Anyway,
he's got no face.
She's just
he's got an arm off.
Hey, where's that come from, I wonder? Anyway, she decides she's got literally no oxygen left, and she decides to go back into cryogenic sleep because they've discovered that the oxygen from the cryogenic units that have been damaged, they can access that and reroute it into her, but it takes longer than 2 minutes to do, so she has to go back into cryogenic suspension. While she's in that, then the computer can reroute the oxygen, so when she lands on this planet, she will live. And I quite liked it. I won't give away the twist of who she actually is. That is quite a nice sort of, oh, that's interesting. And I quite enjoyed it. It was for quite a low-budget film. The special effects are very sort of 2001, sort of majestic spaceships rather than rockets and things. It's quite sort of... And I thought it was quite well done, quite competently done. I didn't get the same sense of claustrophobia as I did in Buried, because she's in this capsule which has got flashing lights and things with it. In Buried, it's dark and there's insects and things getting in. But here, she has visions of rats attacking her and stuff like that. But it's a bit more clinical and cold and a bit more sort of, you know, not as terrifying as Buried. But for basically a film carried by one person, I really enjoyed it. And I think it's worth a look. And I would give it 7 out of 10.
Oh,
that's Oxygen, which is streaming now on the Netflix channel.
Netflix channel.
As we like to call it. Well, that's nearly it for this episode.
AOB,
any other business? Yes, forthcoming attractions. Yes, the things that we will be discussing in the next episode will include, hopefully, The Nevers, the new series with
He Who Will Not Be Named.
He Who Shall Not Be Named, but it's Joss Whedon, which is finally arriving on Sky Atlantic next week. So we'll have seen a couple of episodes of that by the next ep. We've got the return of two of our favourites. We shall have no compunction about reviewing them again. Love, Death and Robots, which is out this Friday.
Yep.
New series of 8 animated shorts, which is tomorrow, yeah. And a surprising quick return of Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand this. They only arrived last October, and this is its third series. They must have obviously made these all the time. They've chopped them in. They must have made 24 and chopped them into
three
series.
I imagine it was made as COVID hit, and they've probably... still been making them.
Yeah, I suppose so.
But just have them available, so I can't wait for that.
I'm looking forward to it. It's quite, I mean, it's a childish thing, but it's good fun. I'm quite looking forward to
that. Dinosaurs.
It's dinosaurs. You've got to love a dinosaur. And another show which I'm recommending to people. I dare say you might not be interested in this, but Doctor Who geeks might be. This is on Sunday. I had no idea this was coming, and I'm very interested in this. It's an hour and a half long drama documentary about Delia Derbyshire. Do you know who she is?
It sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar. Very good play on words there. Very good. She's the woman who created the Doctor Who theme. She didn't write it. Ron Grainer wrote it, but she was in the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. And she was the woman who created it from his notes and his melodies and created all the electronics. She was one of the early pioneers of electronic music, a hugely important figure. And there's a drama documentary, 9 o'clock on Sunday on BBC Four. Obviously, by the time you hear this podcast, it will have been screened, but I think it's on the following Thursday, a week today, so hopefully this podcast will arrive in time for you to catch a repeat. It's called Arena, Delia Derbyshire, The Myths and Legendary Tapes. And it's written, directed, and stars actress Caroline Katz, who's best known for appearing in Doc Martin, although I remember when she was in The Bill many years ago. Seems to have been a bit of a passion project for her, and I'm really looking forward to it, because Delia Derbyshire is quite a mysterious character. We don't know a lot about, except that she was an early electronics pioneer. And she had quite a sad life, because she descended into alcoholism and drug dependency and sort of died in poverty some years ago. So it'll be interesting to find out more about her. Probably not for everybody, but for Doctor Who fans interested in the history of the basics of Doctor Who, which is the theme music, that's definitely one to watch. So that's what I'll be doing on Sunday night, watching that for an hour and a half. And I'm going to review that. I suspect you might not be for you, but if you want to have a look at it, please do. But I will certainly give it a mention in the next episode. That's the only other business I have. You got anything else?
I just say it's my birthday on Tuesday. I'll be 34 years of age, and I would just like to say thank you to Paul for my early birthday present. I have a fantastic original Star Wars 1977 shirt, not Star Wars A New Hope, yes, but original Star Wars 1977, and a collection of Star Wars stamps, so quite fancy looking things as well, with different characters and ships on them. So,
well, I took a punt.
Thank you very much.
I didn't really know what you were a fan of, so I thought, well, I get the impression you might be a bit of a Star Wars fan.
Star Wars is a possible.
So I thought, You know, you can always chuck him in the bin if you don't like him. Before we go, just to mention a couple of things that I finished watching that we talked about in the past.
We finished Invincible.
We talked about that. Brilliant, absolutely. I mean, that, you know, that's how you do right, superhero stuff with a bit of originality and life to it. The last episode was just astonishing. The bit that, I mean, there's so much blood, The bit where, with the pilot, you know, they get attacked by fighter pilots at the beginning.
Invincible
rescues from the pilot. And the pilot goes, oh, thank God, I thought it was a goner there.
Yeah.
And his father comes up and just pops his head. Just
bang.
Like, whoa. And so, yeah, definitely not for easily offended or those with a queasy stomach. But a great series. And that's been renewed for 2 more series, so I'm very pleased about that. Finished watching Them.
Yeah, same.
Wow. Yeah, I think we talked about that, but I don't know if we'd finished it. Had you finished it then?
I didn't need to finish it, no.
Whoa. What a fantastic series. Yeah. I mean, really, wow.
Just well done stuff. Just
fantastic. Yeah. So much, so deep and so dark and really, really edgy. If you, you know,
makes what we reviewed today a bit somber, really, didn't it? Because we haven't had much positive things today. And last week we had loads of positive things to say.
But that was such...
But if we were positive about everything, it may be a boring podcast.
Sometimes we're going to have episodes of things that we don't like, and I think that's fair enough, because it's not all sweetness and light. And I finished something else as well. What else did I finish?
Pennyworth?
Episode 5 of that. I would rush through that, but I watched that with my brother and his missus, so I can't really go ahead.
Oh, so they want you to watch
And they watch so many other bloody things. Something else I finished that we talked about.
There's nothing I can think of for me.
No, I can't think. Probably something else.
I'm sure you remember it like ages later.
Yeah. I'll do a separate 10-second podcast. I also watched this. Incidentally, thank you for reminding me. Please go out and buy or download the new Coldplay single, Higher Power, because I'm a big Coldplay fan and it's bloody great. It's an uplifting anthem, which I think is just what we need as we emerge from the pandemic. And hopefully we are emerging from it.
Fingers crossed.
So anyway, that's all I've got to say, really, Scott. I've got nothing else to say. Have you got anything else to say?
No, apart from thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Get in touch if you want to.
Get in touch with us, tvzoneplus@mail.com. It's very nice to have picked up a couple of comments on my YouTube channel, Paul Mount's World of Stuff, which is still going, just about, from people who listen to the podcast but haven't been in touch. So... thank you for all the silent majority who seem to be listening to us and anybody else.
And stay tuned for the Order 66 song after the credits.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You have been listening to TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.
Excellent. Order 66 was a complete success.
My master, what were the first 65 orders?
I'm glad you asked. Oh, capture me a Wookiee, kick a princess in the cookie, sabotage the espionage of a Vulcan spy, activate the trash compactor, let's protect the main reactor, stab a smuggler in the jugular and watch him die. Corrupt a teen from Tatooine, manipulate a Gungan and kill the Moose Queen, trap him on calamari, take a toddler on safari, hit a topless bar on Mustafar with artist Ralph McQuarrie. Oh, number 13, find investors. Number 14, make a Death Star. While you're at it, draw some plans up for my Death Star to unmask a dirty jaw. What we call General Dodonna, clone a load of cannon fodder out on Camino.
You know what? I'll just email you a PDF or something.
If you don't have the time, then whenever you get around to it.